Okay, text 48. The great sage Maitreya continued, being thus worshipped by Maharaj Prithu, the four Kumaras, who are masters of devotional service, became very pleased. Indeed, they appeared in the sky and praised the character of the king, and everyone observed them. Purport. It is said that the demigods never touch the surface of the earth. They walk and travel in space only. Like the great sage Narada, the Kumaras who do not require any machine, the Kumaras do not require any machine to travel in space. But the piety is so great that the technically what has happened means people are able to fly in the space, they use their machines because of their level of piety. So here then it has to be a mechanical machine. And the heavenly planets, then it's a machine that's powered by mantras, so it means it's by their piety. And then you have the siddhas who then by yogic perfection can fly in the space, but then persons like Narad Muni and the four Kumaras, they can move in the space because they're not conditioned. Right? So the idea is we think we can't, so therefore we can't. We identify with the body, and therefore this body can't fly, so we can't fly. They don't identify like that, so therefore they can't. In other words, don't try this at home. Okay. So it's just all this showing is just their exalted position. Because they're transcendentalists, so they're completely not, in practical application, not on the bodily platform, therefore they're unaffected by the modes of nature. Since they can go from one planet to another, they are called siddhas. That is to say, they have acquired all mystic and yogic powers. Such great saintly persons who have attained complete perfection in mystic yoga are not visible in this age on earth because humanity is not worthy of their presence. The Kumaras, however, praise the characteristics of Maharaj Prithu and his great devotional attitude and humility. Right? So, the Maharaj Prithu, he actually appreciates, he sees them, he offers his respects, he offers everything to them, right? I mean, the standard cliche in the modern context is if you had persons like this come and they could fly in the sky and they wouldn't touch the ground, then the first thing would happen would be, you know, either the military or one of the, you know, how you say, covert agencies would capture them and put them in a room and then try to study them to figure out how to fly. So that's why they don't come around. Not that they should keep them in a room, but just why put yourself in a position to be insulted? Right? So they just don't come. But we see here it says, but Maharaj, Maharaj Prithu, he was able to respect them, surrender to them, and everything. So their coming then is worthwhile. Then there's some benefit. People can take advantage. The Kumaras, however, praise the characteristics of Prithu and his great devotional attitude and humility. The Kumaras were greatly satisfied by King Prithu's method of worship. It was by the grace of Maharaj Prithu that the common citizens in this domain could see the Kumaras flying in outer space. So they came to see him, and because of his piety and his care for the citizens, they also were able to share in seeing. We see this on other occasions, like Narad Muni coming because of Yudhishthira, and then others then could see, or because, you know, Krishna would come to see them, and because of them, then others could see. Right? So the point is, as we made before, by the grace of the devotees, then one sees the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So in this way, by the grace of the Kumaras, then the instructions about how to see the Lord, but then by the grace of Maharaj Prithu, then we can see such great exalted personalities. So this is the position one has to respect, that spiritual position. It always has to be remembered, because this is, we see this in the context compared to Kartavirya Arjuna and others who, because of their power, their prowess, their expertise in managing the world, then they become proud and they think that they are the top, you know, because organization is the top. You see, Indra has the same problem. But above Indra, then there's Satyaloka, which is all the saintly individuals, the Prajapatis, the great sages, Brahma, his sons, they all live there. Right? So they're more pious, they're more elevated because of their knowledge, because of their detachment. So that's how, in other words, the organization is always necessary, otherwise how do things go on? But at the same time, it's only useful as far as it supports the Vedic culture, the Brahminical culture. Right? The Vedic culture is called Brahminical culture because the standards of the Brahman, you know, of understanding Brahman, is actually the focus. And in understanding Brahman, then we're trying to understand in the pure state. Right? It means in the material world there's a concept of Brahman and Paraman. But that's incomplete because they don't see it in connection to Bhagavan. So it's not actually a fully functioning realization. It's enough to get them some facilities in the world, but it's not enough to get them beyond the world. So it says. So that's why you see sometimes, even though devotees, then they understand Brahman and Paramatma. But then sometimes it's spoken of not in an ideal perspective because they themselves who have such realizations, it's not complete. They don't see it in connection with devotion. Because it's lacking that devotion, therefore then it's seen that it's not an ideal position. Yes?
So, Christopher, regarding piety and ability to see, Prithmas was able to see the Kumara's position. Now, what about the modern Kali Yuga and the ability then to see Srila Prabhupada on the sensing temple? What made followers able to see him?
Well, that's Krishna's grace.
Yeah.
That's just Krishna's grace. And their grace that they come. It means he's taking a form that is from this realm, so in that way you can see. But to actually see his position of who he is, you know, as a devotee, as a transcendentalist, these aspects, that's only by Krishna's grace. Otherwise, so many people see, but not. But they're coming in a form that's not from this realm, so that we can see is only then by their grace, and that's only happening because of their coming to see Prithumaj. They are pleased with how he's doing things. In other words, what he's doing is following the Vedic principles of Dharma, according to the Kshatriyas, in Krishna consciousness. So that's what one wants. The performance of your duties in connecting with Krishna consciousness, then that is glorious. So because he's doing that, then they appreciate that. Because how many people do? There's so many living entities. Out of those who are following the Vedic culture, there'll be few. But of those who are following the Vedic culture, those who actually understand what it's for and see it in connection with devotion, that's going to be rare. So then the Kumaras, being great devotees, then they come to spend time with Prithu Maharaj, who has that same qualification. So that's the idea. So it's by the grace of Krishna. Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami mentions that when the individual soul is actually interested in knowing Krishna, then Krishna arranges that they come in contact with the bona fide spiritual master. So when they actually are interested, then Krishna arranges that they meet the devotees. And if they're not interested, then they don't meet. So you see that sometimes. So. And that's generally why, if it's possible, then we always move about so that we're able to be identified as devotees. Because otherwise people may meet devotees, but they don't know that they've met devotees, so they make no, there's no change in their consciousness. But if they're dressing and acting in a way that it matches, then they'll think, what's this, what's going on? It'll further there, it'll be agyata sukriti. Otherwise, the other is, yes, you blend in, and what are you blending into? A bunch of vikarmic mleches and yavanas. Whoopee, jai, real effort. Does that make sense? Yeah, so it's nothing glorious, nothing special. But for the devotees, then people will see, then they'll get that benefit by seeing. You know, they'll be inquisitive, what's going on here, what's happening. You know, it's like the man in his suit and briefcase walks by the Harinam every day, and then after some time, after many, you know, years, then he comes over, what are you guys doing? What's happening here? You know, so in other words, his agyata sukriti from seeing them every day builds up to the point where he becomes inquisitive. You know, and if it keeps building, then one day it'll turn into faith, and then it'll turn into practice. So that's the idea of what is trying to create the environment for people to associate with devotees. That's the whole process. Right, so we're just finding. So here Pritu Maharaj is then arranging through his administration so that everybody in the kingdom can practice Krishna consciousness. They have in other words, they have the basic facilities of maintenance and that so that they're comfortable. And then there's the point of God consciousness, so therefore then they're inclined towards that. He's practicing, then they'll practice. Does that make sense? That's the whole point. Yes?
Maharaj, could you a little explain, you know, we could say the pillars of a healthy state, like in sample Finland. What are like the pillars, which maybe there's still way to go, but you know,
meaning that it is a healthy state as an example, so therefore.
Well, the president said it's a most secure state in the world, but the fifth, he said, in the level of happiness.
Fifth in the level of happiness.
Second in the education, and like that. But I don't know which number fifth for the spiritual.
Maybe there needs to be more silence.
Okay.
Before opening all those public saunas, then it was actually, you know, eighth, and now opening God's moved down to fifth.
Yeah,
I think
that's
I mean, as we see here, the essential point that Bhagavatam's bringing out is God consciousness. Because that actually then can create happiness. If one's God conscious, the soul can be happy. One's not God conscious, one actually can't be happy. So then, if there's any perceived happiness, if one's not God conscious, that will basically be, you know, come from the principles of relationships with others and all that. So if they have, you know, strong family ties, community ties, then there'll be a higher sense of security and happiness. Yeah. But even that, where does that come from? That will come from the religion. Right? So it just may be, you know, some, but now it's what? 250 years, you know, of the kind of the secular, the concept of the secular state. So people don't necessarily attribute to things that they do, you know, connected to religion. But the point is anything they're gaining is because of its connection to. So they don't see, because they define religion as the particular rituals that they'll perform, you know, in connection with, yeah, you know, some higher authority, higher power, you know. So, but their performance of activities in line with what is the actual nature of things, then that will create a better understanding. So if they deal with the material energy more properly, the results will be better. Therefore, then their perceived happiness will be greater. But even if you get it where they're number one on the planet, you know, because somebody must be number one. I'm not sure which one it is. But then the problem is there's still going to be a lack for the soul. In other words, they have whatever they want materially, but you know, in the way of facilities, relationships, and all that. But the problem will be is that there still won't be that satisfaction of the soul because of the temporary nature. So that's what's glorious about Maharaj Prithu, is that he's practicing Krishna consciousness and using his services as a king, as a medium to express that. In other words, we're expressing devotional service through direct activities, and we're expressing through the indirect activity. So that of the king, that's indirect. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Let us say we're performing a Rath Yatra festival. So the Rath Yatra, because it's deity worship, is direct. But now in that, then there'll be offerings to Jagannath, there'll be the pujas to Jagannath, the tending to Jagannath, the kirtan for Jagannath, you know, people pulling the ropes and all these things. So these will be direct activities. But to see that all those direct activities can go on, you have to organize it. So technically that's indirect. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, but because it's being done for that, all those things can be properly engaged, it takes on the quality of direct. You know, like Prabhupada uses the term spiritualized. So it becomes spiritualized. Because otherwise these things on their own aren't. You know, like if you pull on a rope, it doesn't mean it's Rath Yatra. Otherwise, if it was, then that means, you know, so many people in England would be performing Rath Yatra every time they go to the bathroom. You know, so, no? You know, they have this long, you know, the long rope. And, yeah, so that is not Rath Yatra. So it's not that, it's a secondary that's engaged in, but the thing is it's direct there. So here is that you're pulling the rope, and the only purpose of pulling the rope is that it pulls the cart, which Jagannath is on. That's why we'll call it a direct activity. But technically you can divide it into, you want to please Lord Jagannath by service, and the service you'll do is pulling his cart. So the pulling of the cart is the secondary, wanting to please him is the primary. Right? But because the immediate result is pulling this cart is called a direct activity. Or something like management, then you manage, then they can pull the rope, then you can serve Krishna. Right? So because it has that step away, that's why it would be indirect. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, marketing will be an indirect activity of cooking. Does that make sense? So it's not actually direct because there's steps between. But actually when you take things and throw them into the pot, that would be called direct cooking. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to distinguish that, because then we can make a distinction. Okay, the attitude's right, but let's say the management needs some improvement, or the management's great, but the direct activity of the attitude of pleasing Krishna is missing or weak. Does that make sense? Because if you can't tell the difference, one will think, I did expert management, therefore it's high quality devotional service. And it may be, but we have to be able to distinguish what's the attitude. So that we see is the whole thing that's trying to be developed is this principle of attitude. If that attitude's right, then things work out. And the attitude's not right, then Krishna's, you know, no one's a better manager than him, right? He's sustaining the whole cosmos, and he does that by, how do you say, delegation. He in Vrindavan doesn't have to do anything. But he delegates to himself, he expands, and he then takes on as Balaram, the Balaram's mom, as Vasudev, then, you know, into the Chakravyuha, then into Mahavishnu, and then into Garbhadakshaya, Kiradakshaya, like this, then he takes care of everything. So for him, management is not special. It's not that we'll impress Krishna with our management. You know, unnecessary, because if we don't do anything, it still goes on anyway. right? The whole world goes on amazingly, even if we're not involved, right? You know, all these great leaders of society, they think without us it won't go on, but it won't go on quite nicely without us, right? You know, the birds, it doesn't matter. You have a fancy car or not, you made a nice driveway or not, you made a fancy house, you know, you have heating. It doesn't matter to them. Their trees still out there, and they have their nest, and they go around and eat what they eat, and that's all Krishna's arrangement. Right? You know, we're having trouble getting, you know, that everybody has a place to stay, has food, has medical, this, that. But all the animals, they already have this. Right? So who's the better manager? Yeah. Is that so? So therefore then what's the uniqueness, the specialness of the human society is that they can do these things and be God conscious, because the animals are doing these things but they're not God conscious. So if we're not God conscious, then what's the difference between us and the animals, other than we have to work harder than the animals? Right? The animals, it's like the birds live in the tree here. Everything they require is all here. Right? They don't have to get on a, you know, one of those, what do you call it? You know, those trains that go like 400 miles an hour and then travel for 2 hours to get to some place where there's some bugs and then they can eat and then come back. And that every day all the birds are on the train. You have to adjust the things that you hold because of the wings, you know, stuff like that. So the fundamentals will be is that the main thing is, if you're talking about administration itself, is the protection of the citizens. That's the first thing. If that's not there, then you don't have administration. You may have management and administration in the way of what we'll call office work. Like sometimes it's called administration, means the office stuff. But technically, that's not, in government, it's not, that's not administration, that's bureaucracy. Right? It means you have to have it, but it's actually, administration is the part of protecting the citizens. Right? Then, to protect the citizens, part of it is you have to do all the office work and all those things. So then they'll have people that do that, the bureaucrats. You know, the civil servants, right? So then they take care of those kind of things. But if the mood is not that of protecting the citizens, it's simply to gain profit and all that, then you have just a very large corporation. You know? So then that's not, the people won't be satisfied. So in other words, there must be more of a principle that they're trying to take care of the people, so therefore then there's more satisfaction in the people. And in places where they're less satisfied means they're less caring about taking care. Because that's the whole thing, is you can't be satisfied in a situation unless the authorities are worrying about the care of the citizens. But that's the care of the citizens according to what's the standard, not according to what they want. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because otherwise it won't work. So, yeah, so that's the first principle. If that's there, then you can get into anything else that you require. So what we're seeing here is that what's being brought out is that he cares for the citizens, that's why it goes nicely, and because of him, the citizens are also able to appreciate the presence of the four Kumaras. And then the whole point of why the importance of the four Kumaras is because of their God consciousness. So he's God conscious, they're God conscious, he appreciates their God consciousness. He applies that into his administration, then that's why the people will be benefiting. So that spiritual perspective and that sense of duty in the form of trying to protect the citizens, then that will make everything else work. Everything else will be details.
So, meaning that the kings or the state leaders position him, it has to be, or in the case of try to do it the other way, you know, that's the shortest way. If the state leaders themselves thought consciousness.
Yes, if it means, in other words, if they're like that, they think like that, then they're going to make decisions based on that principle.
Yeah.
Will this protect the people? Will this allow them to be God conscious? And if it will, then it has its value. If it won't, then you look for another solution. Because to any one problem, there's so many solutions.
Yeah.
So you want to choose one that will further the, you know, the protection and enlightenment of the citizens, like that, you know, the education of the citizens and all that. So these things then become very important. So you see, then if you're supporting the Brahminical mood, then that means you also then, because there's a studying and teaching. Right? So if you're protecting the citizens, how they'll actually prosper is if they're properly educated. Then that means then the studying and teaching has to be there. So then things pick up. So you see there's something here. I think it's the only country in the world that they actually pay their teachers a good salary. And I think that's just a new thing. They've just started to do that. Because in other places they don't pay.
Nice. It's average.
It's complaining about salary, but it's...
Yeah, but I'm saying it's average, but in most places it's below average. Mm-hmm. Like that. Like in America, it's you know, being a plumber, you get more money. You know, the guys that pick up the garbage, any of those things, any of the blue-collar work, you get more money than being a teacher.
Taxi drivers earn more than teachers in the UK, certainly.
Yeah. So that's the, you know, and the fun part is the teachers that had invested more into the system, right? Because to be able to get the degrees you require, then you have to be getting the education all the way through. That means you're putting money into the system and not getting anything back. Well, the taxi driver, then whenever you can get a license, you can start, and he's already taking money and didn't put hardly anything in other than, you know, petrol. That's his only investment. Yeah. But it's just that there's more. I'm not sure if that's in all things or as they go up or something, but it's more than others will invest. My thought. So because of that, then the quality, then you can get people who are more qualified will be interested to teach. Because they properly pay, then people who have the qualifications will come forward. Otherwise, they'll go do something else like that. So he sees there's some elements where they're coming closer to the Vedic version, therefore they're getting the benefit. They don't necessarily know it's the Vedic version, but that's why things will work. You know, the educational system, children can move at their own speed. You know, they have a standard, curriculum. Then you can go through that. You know, let's say it's a 3-year curriculum, you can take 4 years, you can take 2 years. So it's whatever speed you can move. These are, you know, according to the individual as they're going. So the more they're following these Vedic principles, the better results. So then, you know, because it'll have an effect. Okay, I'm not sure if that goes all the way down, but I know at least in the secondary education that's there. I don't know about the primary. But but now that means then if the kids can move at their own speed and all that, they'll be more inspired. And if they're more inspired, then they harass their parents less. If they harass their parents less, their parents are more happy. And so since most people have kids, and of that a lot of them are teenagers, therefore just by that one thing, you know, this little bit of they can move at their own speed and the teachers are, you know, of good quality, then right there you raise the standard of happiness in the country so much. You know, so it's just little things like that. All these go together. So that's the Vedic principle. All of it together is a culture. So,
yeah. Can I say one comment of one politician or some atheist, just to little try to find the maybe the direct and indirect and the ways to preach. He said that Is that the, your ISKCON devotees, you are just doing too much this, you know, singing and preaching and jumping and dancing and all that stuff. Instead of that, you know, do just these lectures. They are good, you know, do the, you know, based on logic and like that. So he kind of, there's an appreciation, but definitely not the understanding of what's seen externally like that. So how would I say, how to make, is there anything we have to change in our three angas in order to, how would I say, make the people more understanding, or just adding something there?
No, it's just the more we understand.
Yeah.
Because the point is that our, you know, it's like you say, is our occupation is studying and teaching, right? And then in our free time, we're chanting, dancing, and taking prasad, right? So in their occupation, they're engaged in the political field, and in their free time, then they're chanting, dancing, and drinking all kinds of weird things. Right? In other words, you know, they go out, they do that. I mean, that's what we do for fun, you know. It's just it's so fun, we can do it on the street. They have to go to some funny place with guys wearing black suits and little things in their ears, stuff like that, and then they can, you know, feel that it's a good time. You know, we go out where there's fresh air. And so, you know, but the thing is that it's there, they appreciate, but the, so if it's just on that, they appreciate that side, that's good. But otherwise, even for the atheists, if they're interested in a cooperative social system or cooperative social environment, then the point is belief in God, then people work harder. People work, have a higher principle. They see more to it, because if you just look at the day-to-day and what they have, it's not that interesting. But if there's something beyond, that there's a supreme, and there's a, you know, a life after death, and there's someone watching and seeing what you do, and what you do is going to affect that life after death, people will actually be more careful to follow the rules. So as far as governance goes, then that there's, that it's theistic is actually better for the running of the government. Atheistic position, then why do you care? Because if there is no God, there is no laws, there is none of these things, then, you know, universal laws or that, or piety and impiety, what does it matter what you do? So why do you have to follow the state laws? So what has to be understood is people follow state laws because there's the principle of following law. So if you don't follow, if you don't have the sense of following God's law, then why would you necessarily be interested in following state law? And if you don't follow that, you're not going to follow community law, you're not going to follow family law. In fact, you're not even going to follow all the things that you say you're going to do, right? You know, it's just like the you have here, but on the 1st of January, then you make all kinds of, you know, determinations that this year I'm going to do this. And you have that kind of a thing?
You know, it's a resolution.
Huh? New Year's resolution. Okay, yes. So, and then how many of them you keep? Right? So we can't even follow our own. But if there's the concept of that there's the Supreme, and He has laws, then following those laws, then it makes sense that there is a sense of law. So then if the government is also God-conscious, then the laws of becoming are in connection with God-consciousness, so then those laws would be followed. Then the community, they're following, they're doing what they're doing, and also God-conscious, so you follow that, the family, and then you're trying to, the vows that you take, or that resolutions, and they're also God-conscious, so then it's consistent. So being a law-abiding citizen, being responsible, and all that, you know, having that civic sense, that you know, that work ethic, and that proper etiquettes, and all these things, those all come from this one thing of accepting that the Supreme is in control, and everything belongs to the Supreme, so therefore we're, you know, just taking care on their behalf. Then we follow their laws. Then we see that goes all the way down. So sometimes you see is, oh, they just try to work on the government, or they just work on families, or they just work on this. No, by getting God, then you get everything. Like, what was it? On the Sunday program, the one, you know, guest, after hearing all this, that he raised his hand and said, you know, there's only so it's just so many zeros until you put a one or something like that. Comment after the whole. So that's the whole point, is that they can try doing all these things, but they're all zeros. You know, work on education, work on the government, work on community, work on families, work on individuals. Then the difficulty is that there are only so many zeros. Right? But you put, you know, and then, okay, so Finland has more zeros than other countries, so they're happier, right? But the point is, as soon as you put a one in front of it, that's when it actually becomes significant. But, so if they think they're happy now, imagine if they're God conscious, how happy they'd be. You know, just so much more. So,
yeah, definitely. Thank
yes.
Maharaj, back to that example about Ratha Yatra. I would like to understand better at what moment an action is considered to be connected. Let's say with God.
When the result is connected.
But let's say there are two managers. Both are managing Ratha Yatra, and everything looks the same. Outcome also the same. Mm-hmm. But one is doing that by being obsessed with his ability to be a manager.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is doing to serve God. Then in that situation, how that outcome is connected more or less with God. Although the first one was more obsessed with management.
Yeah. Means the one who is more obsessed with management, then he's focusing on the management, so that the management is connected to Ratha Yatra, he's going to get benefit for devotional service. But it will be indirect devotional service.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It means because it's only because that there is the concept of the Ratha Yatra is to please Jagannath, therefore he's getting benefit because he took part in that. But otherwise he was managing because he's a good manager. You know, so he's managing basically for management's sake, but it's connected to the Lord. So mm-hmm. even if it's in any way it's connected, the Lord is always beneficial. So it's not that someone should stop management because they can only absorb themselves in management, and they say, oh, but this is not good and that, and you should stop, you should give this up, it's nonsense. That's not actually an important position. It's anything connected, just like Narad Muni makes the point, is that connecting to the Lord, remembering the Lord, even if it's like Kamsa, it's inimical, he's envious of the Lord. He still gets benefit. He advances, he'll get liberation. But from that kind of attitude, he won't get bhakti. So imagine the person who's always absorbed in Krishna that's favorable, then how much more?
Mm-hmm.
So anything connected to Krishna, you're always going to be, it's always going to be good. So here is that you're connected with Krishna, because it's Ratha Yatra, it's Jagannath, but you're also connected with the devotees. Because it's on the order of the devotees that were involved in the Ratha Yatra festival. So then you'll get more benefits. So it is progressing in bhakti. It's not just like that we're just doing this and not getting the bhakti. Right? So there will be. But it won't be as much as the other manager who is organizing just to please Krishna. And he's trying to see that all these activities, in other words, what are we managing? We're managing the activities that are pleasing to Krishna. We're thinking it's the management is pleasing to Krishna. No, it's the activities that by management can therefore be done for Krishna. It's like what's in a temple. You worship the deities, right? You do sankirtan. You know, you're having the sadhana, you know, it's there. Devotees are being trained in Krishna consciousness. So in a sense, they're taking prasadam. They're preaching. Right? Anything else? You understand? So all those things are activities of devotional service. Management is just so that all those can go on nicely. So it's not that the management is the central feature. No, it's devotional service, and the activities of devotional service being performed in the association of devotees is the central feature. Management holds it all together so it can all go in a nice way. Therefore, it becomes devotional service. In other words, the management is connected to things that are devotional service, therefore it becomes devotional service. That's what we mean by it. It becomes Krishnaized. They're just like the body, it's dead matter, but we're using Krishna's service, it becomes Krishnaized. So in that way it's non-different, like the iron and fire. But we have to always remember is the iron in fire acts like fire, but iron on its own is not fire. So if we make the mistake to think that management itself is devotional service, then on itself, how is it going to maintain? It has to be in the fire of devotional service. So in other words, when we're organizing devotional activities, then you could say the iron of management is in the fire of devotional activities. Then it takes on the same qualities. Then the manager gets the same benefit. Because let's say the temple president is arranging that there are facilities and devotees that can do the puja, then by organizing that, then he gets the same benefit as those who do the puja. So it's not the management, it's because it's connected to that, because you could be managing, you know, anything, let's say a hospital or something, you know, or a business. So you're managing, but because it's not connected to devotional service, then you only get the benefit that management can give you, which means an organized thing that there'll be some progression.
So can we say that actually Madhradha Yatra is managed, but devotional service is managed, Krishna consciousness is managed?
Yes, yes. We're managing that people can perform devotional service. Mm-hmm. If we see it from that point of view, then one, management becomes so much easier, because otherwise if management is just management, it's a headache. Of course, someone has the ability, that's their nature, that's their duty, it's a headache that they can deal with. You know, that's the whole thing, that's what Varnashram is about. Is what headache are you comfortable with? That's the point. You know, if the headache is you're on your own, you have no facilities and that, just whatever's given to you, and that headache's okay, then, you know, being a brahmachari is great. Right? And if the headache of having all the facilities, having to manage that and everybody connected with it, then that's grihastha. Right? Does that make sense? And then trying to give that up, the headache of giving that up, that's vanaprastha. Does that make sense? Your headache is studying and teaching and everything to do with that educational. That's the headache you can deal with, and that's the brahminical. You can deal with the administration, and that's the kshatriya. You can deal with economics, that's the vaishya. You can deal with arts, that's the shudra. So in other words, someone's qualified for something because they can handle everything that goes along with it. Is that sense? Yeah. And so then because of that, it's not considered a headache. But at the same time, it's because the soul's not the conditioned nature, that even if we do it and we're situated nicely, it'll be okay. You know, it's not bad, it's not uncomfortable, but it's just ordinary. A kshatriya doing kshatriya work is just ordinary because they're a kshatriya. Right? So, therefore then, what's for the soul? The satisfaction of the soul is that it's being done for Krishna. Right? Then the soul gets some benefit. Then it can be inspiring. So then, management can be inspiring to someone who's a manager because they see they're managing devotional service. They're managing so that devotees can be involved in devotional service. Otherwise we just see, okay, you have a temple, it's a place, you have to pay for it, you have to clean it, you have to get people to do all that. Then that's the difficult part. But if you see it as it's an opportunity for devotional service, you have the facility, you have this and that, because the bigger it is, the more trouble it is to clean and maintain. But if you're thinking about it, no, it's service, then the bigger it is, then it's you can do service, like when you have big programs, same time as cleaning it is also service, because that's dham seva. Does that make sense? So all this is what goes on. So then you're organizing to see that these five direct activities of devotional service are going on. That's what makes the temple unique in the whole process. Right? In the whole community, the temple is unique because everything about it is direct. Well, in the home, in the community, everything is indirect unless you practice devotional service. Then you're doing that, then it starts to get connected. Okay, you cook and offer it to you know, your deities at home, you chant your japa, you study some of the books, like that. You try to you keep the the deity's facilities clean and all these things like that. And then that aspect you can say is direct. But unless you see the rest of your facilities in the home as direct, connected to that direct, it's indirect. You see, it's Krishna's house, therefore the whole house, including the closets and the garage, have to be clean because it's Krishna's closets and garage. Then the whole house then gets connected with that aspect of direct devotional service. If you see the whole, therefore, the deities are there, it's their house, therefore the standards of cleanliness and behavior everywhere, then it takes on that. So in other words, then the house can become like the temple. Mm-hmm. But how do you learn that unless you see that at the temple and learn that from the temple? So that's why they go together. The temple is where he wants organizing all the direct activities. And the community, then, is indirect activities and it's not organized. We say communities are important, but where's the organization to see that individuals are engaged in activities of devotional service? So if we're not organizing it, then that, and if there's and if by organizing it, then what's the difference therefore between organizing a temple and organizing a community? Because if it's organization is the problem, then how do you say? That's why in the Vedic culture, going to the forest on your own is recommended. Right? Remember, I think it was this one devotee or brahmachari was complaining, about the chanting in the temple and temple room in the morning japa, and the ladies are there, and then he's saying, but the ladies are there. And the Prabhupada says, well, if you don't want any ladies, then you have to go to the forest. Go chant your japa there. because there's no ladies out there. So the whole point is that organization means that you're organizing devotional activities. That's the complaint about the karmis, is that they're organizing so much, trying to make everything go nicely, but the essential point, reason for organizing is not there. Brahmins are studying and teaching, but what? Devotional service. The Kshatriyas are administrating. What? That everybody can be engaged in devotional service. Right? Everybody in their position. The Vaishyas are generating facility money and all that. Why? Because they take care of the Shudras, they give, they do welfare work, they pay taxes to the Kshatriyas, and they give charity to the Brahmins. So all the other orders, all money is created by the Vaishyas. Kshatriyas, Brahmins, Shudras actually don't create money. Vaishyas create it. They may all take part in some way, but they create it. Does that make sense? So then if that's seen, that that's being done so that all this Krishna consciousness can go on and all these capacities, then that making all the money, then that drive to make more and more money is not a distraction or disturbance. Because that's one of the duties of a Vaishya, is that to always have that drive to always increase how much money they can make. Right? Does that make sense? So, why? Because then there's more facilities. But if they only increase that money just for them to have more facilities and for sense gratification, then it's a waste of time. Because the soul won't get any benefit. But if they're doing that so then they can support everybody else in devotional service, then it has a meaning. Then it has a value.
Does it mean that any guest who comes to the temple should be able to see the example how his home life should be organized? Because the temple shows the example how everything is organized.
Yeah. It's just like, let's say, if someone comes to your door, someone answers the door, right? Mm-hmm. If they come to your house and come to the door, someone answers the door. So it should be when someone comes into the temple, they actually bump into somebody and they actually interact. Not that they walk in, walk around, and walk out and no one even knew. So yes, they can come in, they can see how it's clean, it's ordered, there's things that are going on, when there's activities that people are absorbed there, that people come and invite them to take part or see why they're there, in some way you engage them and all that, then it becomes very nice. So yes, So it's like where you go, someone goes to your house, then you're pleasant with them. So someone comes to the temple, then we're pleasant with them. Like that. Because like it said, it's that, no, we're in the temple so that no one bothers us and everything like that. Then one should go to the forest, no one will bother you there.
But I'm talking from that perspective that some people, or most people, believe that life at the temple it's something absolutely different than life, their personal life. But if they come and can see that the devotees address all the same activities, all the issues, yeah, that the person has.
It's just the proportion.
Yeah.
In other words, temple life means the direct activity is the prominence. You know, major prominence, and the indirect, then they're only, you can see that they're in support of the direct. Well, that the home, depending upon the realization of the individual, then there may be more or less direct. That means they'll generally be more indirect and less direct, because it's Krishna's temple, it's only that. So any bills being paid, any money being raised, any cleaning going on, any of these kind of organization, it's all for Krishna. So at the home, as more that you see it that way, then it turns into that. And the less you see it that way, then yes, it's your house and you have to work hard. You know, because if you're working hard and it's only for yourself, it doesn't give so much satisfaction. But if you're working hard and it's for others, then it works. Like how many bachelors do you see, you know, working really, really, really hard? Right? Not many. But once someone gets married and then they feel that their work is going for the benefit of the family, then you see that they're working hard. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea, is that it gives the example, so therefore it should be the example. That's the idea, is that the temple can set that example. So, yeah. Yes.
Namaskar, Swamiji. Swamiji, I was following this thing. So I have taken all the headaches in my life, as you mentioned.
All the headaches. Last one of them. Hasn't been a headache you have not taken.
That's yet to be found. And you mentioned about the direct involvement versus the indirect involvement. How do we increase this involvement to create more happiness in the indirect way?
Indirect means you're taking what the definition of direct and indirect means. The direct activity means the result of it is directly connected to Krishna.
Yeah.
While an indirect activity means the result of it is not connected to Krishna, and then you can, through steps, connect it to Krishna. Right? The example is given like you take your bath. So the bath is not direct, because it's the immediate effect of taking a bath is it's good for the health. And then with that, you know, how you say, bathe self and health, then you could use that to go to the temple and go to the program and all that. Then this becomes devotional service. You know, it's indirect, it becomes devotional service, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you could also do that and go out to the movies. So, you know what I'm saying? So the direct means you're chanting japa, it's not that it's for something else. Right? That's directly, it's Krishna, so you're directly connected to Krishna. So the indirect activities means all those activities we're doing that engages our conditioning. And then, because we have an interest in that conditioning, or identification with that. And so that's the indirect. But if those are all done for pleasing Krishna, then they're in the fire of the direct activities. They may not be direct, but they're in the fire of. Right? So if you get up in the morning, take your bath to go to the temple, therefore your bath is considered part of the pancharatri process. So then it takes on that quality. You know, but that bath that you take because you're going out to let's say, a business meeting and all that, that would be indirect, because the business meeting, then from the business meeting, then you get business, and then from that business you get money. That money then can be used for Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It's very interesting. Okay.
What's the duty of constituents who are forced to serve under a derelict manager, bad manager, someone who's not protecting those constituents?
Job. If they're engaged in devotional service, they get the benefit of the devotional service. Materially, it may not be so prosperous, but they still get the benefit.
I have this experience.
And then, because they're getting benefit, because they're engaged in devotional service, then the manager who engaged them, he gets benefit. And so they're actually benefiting him. He's progressing because of them.
Right? I have no doubt, because I was working under, he's the head of the prep school where I teach. And I tried to give him your lectures, Maharaj. I wasn't successful, but in listening to your lectures and carrying on the practice, I do feel that he was very much benefited.
Yeah.
But the tolerance, I felt that was perhaps my test. But in terms of this discussion yesterday, when I asked about effectuating change, is there anything that, in a personal way, in a general way, what can those constituents do other than tolerate?
Choose another job?
Yeah.
You know, the point is that, in other words, if you can handle that and it works, it all balances out. In other words, if there's an obvious better alternative, then why not take that? But if there's not, then it's just all the same, you know, frying pan into the fire kind of stuff, that is just a matter of what you can do. Then it's a matter of what kind of insanity you can tolerate. Right? In other words, the boss is a jerk, but everybody else is okay, or everybody else is a jerk, but the boss is okay, you know, or they're all jerks, but, you know, the coffee's great. You know, whatever it is that you find that it works for you, then that's what you get. You then choose that situation, because there is no ideal situation in the material world. Ideal is being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. But as far as the material facility, then it's never going to be perfect, because even if it is perfect, like we see under the reign of Prithu and Priyavrat and all these great kings, Yudhishthira, it is materially as good as it gets. But without Krishna consciousness, it won't be satisfying. That's the whole thing, is that we think, oh, when the facilities are better, then all can be more Krishna conscious. But no, Krishna consciousness is one thing, and material satisfaction is a different thing. Krishna consciousness can give material satisfaction, but material satisfaction can never give Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? So that if that faith is there, that understanding is there, then we can actually look at it that how much can I be engaged in Krishna consciousness, and then how much time for the situation that I'm comfortable in, how much time does it need to maintain that? Because it's a matter of maintenance, it's not a matter of increasing it. We always think of increasing. No, it's like, what is the level that you're comfortable at? And Prabhupada defines comfortable as not uncomfortable. Right? If we take it as comfortable meaning happiness, then happiness can't be, it's something you'll be running after forever. It's uncatchable. Right? And then, you know, even when we say we caught it, we only caught it for the moment, then it moves into the past. So it's not under our control, it's under control of time. The satisfaction means what you have now, that's in the present. And present and works in goodness, so that means with proper knowledge and duty, then one can be satisfied in the present. Right? And so then one sees that what one requires and not drop, try not, you know, you make your endeavor to not drop below that, but you don't need to go above that either. Does that make sense? You know, so once you have it to that point where it works, all the rest of that time can be spent for Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, people, yes, they do their 8-hour job and this and that, but then they don't end up necessarily with more time for Krishna consciousness, because they want more, so they're trying other things and doing things on the internet and talking to people and, you know, doing all their networking, you know, all these different things, trying to expand the facilities they'll gain. So instead of spending 8 hours a day, they're spending 10, 12. And the point is okay, now if we take 12 hours, and then we... And I have not heard of anybody getting a star for a drip. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they don't eat, they'll end up at the hospital on a drip. And so drips aren't known to be, you don't have a whole culture, a connoisseur culture around drips, you know. It's not that they're all sitting around the table with their drip. And, how do you say, 1947 from that region of France, you know, that. I think it's even that, you know, that one farmer, I met him before. They're not doing that, no. Wow, it's used before, you know, December 2017. Yeah, it was a good month. You don't see that, you know, the guys are in the hospital in the bed. You know, and the nurse comes in with a few, you know, she brings in, you know, what do you think? You know, they're not doing that. Right. If that makes any sense. So. Anglo-Saxon humor. Absolutely useless, but they find it amusing. Does that make sense? Someone else has something? Yes.
Raj, you mentioned, I think, that the ability to appreciate spiritual personalities, it's the mercy of the Lord. It's like a blessing. I heard that if one is not able to appreciate the spiritual teachers, it's to the degree of one's envy.
Yes, that would be there. You could say that. See, because if the heart's not pure, then one can't appreciate things that are more elevated than your position, right? Either materially or spiritually. And so envy then means that that's an impurity in the heart, because that's what brings us to the material world, is envy and attachment. So then if we're more envious, that means then we're more polluted. That means we can take less and less advantage of the material environment. We might be able to, in our envy, then have such a competitive mindset that we could, in the material platform, endeavor for something and get some very good results because we have such a drive. But the point is we won't have any, there won't be anybody close, there'll be no relationships developed from that. So we'll have facility. The facility is so that, therefore you can engage in relationships. Right? Sambandha is called relationship, so that means it's supposed to be then you apply relationship and then you get the experience of that relationship. But if all we have from our endeavor is facility, then our only relationship is with that facility. You know, so then walking around your big house and looking out on that fabulous view on LA that you yourself bought all the air rights from there all the way down to the ocean, then yes, you have, but that's all you have. And it's not going to reciprocate. It's just going to exist. So there won't be that satisfaction. Does that make sense? You know, it's not like, you know, then in his will he leaves his estate to the heir, you know, that's there. You know. Does that make sense? So the envy is always going to be a symptom of impurity like that. It's not that one has a right to it. You know, if you want to stay in the material world, then yes, that's your right. But if you want to get out of the material world, then it's something that has to be given up. So wherever you see it, it's one quality. Wherever you see it, then you know it's there. Then it has to be reduced. Right? And it's reduced by then the understanding of the philosophy. Otherwise, materially, how are you going to reduce it? Right? Because it's not very often you find that those in the entourage are willing to come along on New Year's night or Christmas Eve and take you through a whole song and dance so that when you wake up in the morning, then you're a changed man. You know what I'm saying? We only hear that happened. They went to the trouble for, you know, Mr. Scrooge, but no one else that made the endeavor. You know, so it's not a common thing, so you can't hope for that. You know, it's like ajamil. Ajamil means that which never happened before and will never happen again. So Scrooge must have a similar. Does that make sense?
But it may be sometimes one's envious condition may be due to offenses, actually. It's not just the ignorance.
But it can have to mean, but still offenses means there's ignorance, because you don't, you're ignorant of what you're offending. Right? Means you deal with, let's say, your bowl wrong. It's not called an offense. It'll end up with a dent in it or a crack or, you know, like that. It won't end up, depending what it's made out of. You know, India, the stainless steel, and you see some of those brahmachari bowls or lotus, you wonder if they were, if they picked them up at a, you know, Hiroshima museum, you know, something like that. It's amazing how it could happen.
You should see the steel pots here in the kitchen.
Yeah, it's like you can't even imagine how it's possible that this could happen. You know, it's like if you brought the same pot and handed it to, you know, one of these, you know, big muscle, you know, the guys with muscle men, or to a martial artist and say, and show them, you know, the one we have and say, do this to that, they wouldn't be able to do it. You know, it's like they, it's amazing, you know, it's like how they, you know, they know how to drop it just right, you know. Others that could be all day and couldn't get a dent, and they've always wondered, you know, it's amazing. It's like, the amazing thing is they still work. You know, that you know, it's transcendental, because otherwise anywhere else it wouldn't even work. But here, so it works. You know, the Lord's in control. Yeah. So that you don't know what you're dealing with. In other words, dead matter, you're not offending, but you're going against the law of nature, therefore you're getting the reaction in. So therefore you drop the glass, it breaks. But it's not that the glass is offended, and then, you know, after picking itself up, then it, you know, walks off. Like that. And every time you reach for it on the shelf, it moves. You know, but it's, okay, that was offended, and you go to the next shelf, and hopefully then that one's okay. You know? You know, or it really wants to do is then you you go and okay, you catch the glass and put it down, think okay, everything's done, and then you go and get your stuff to drink, and then when you pour it, it moves. Then you know it's really offended. Trying to get you. Right? So who do you offend? You offend, you know, you offend people you see, but that'll just be an equal reaction. Offense means it's a greater reaction than physically has been performed, because you're dealing with something greater than just the physical or the you know, the mental platform. You're dealing with the spiritual platform, so then it gives a greater effect. That's why you see is that if you do things properly, then the results that come are so much greater in spiritual life. And if you do something wrong, then there's so much the other way. So offense means it is based on ignorance. Now, whether they know that they are doing or not, but that's another thing. But still, just with ignorance, it still works. That makes sense? Because it is what it is.
And is it just a matter of time if the person still sticks to devotional service?
It's a matter of time. They'll get purified and they'll start making less and less. But it, depending upon the person, it may take a long time. But the point is that they should never give up the process. Amongst great personalities, Maharaj Prithu was the chief by virtue of his fixed position in relation to spiritual enlightenment. He remained satisfied as one who has achieved all success in spiritual understanding. So this being absorbed in Krishna consciousness, being satisfied with that position in Krishna consciousness, this we see is that's his glory. So that's what we can learn. So we see is that we're getting example, in this case, from a king. But the example is there for all devotees. And sometimes we'll think, oh, we can't be a king because we can't walk around with a crown and a sword. You know, it's weird. No, no. That's not the principles that can always be done. So that's purport. Remaining fixed in devotional service gives one the utmost in self-satisfaction. Actually, self-satisfaction can be achieved only by pure devotees who have no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, when it says one should be satisfied, means one should be a devotee. Because without being a devotee, you can't actually be satisfied. Since the Supreme Personality of Godhead has nothing to desire, he is fully satisfied with himself. Surely a devotee who has no desire other than to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead is self-satisfied as the Supreme Lord, right? Do we see what's happening here? It's not something different. Krishna is satisfied in himself. If we're absorbed in him, we are also can be satisfied as he is satisfied. Because the trick is to be Krishna conscious. Because something else won't work. Right? Not that he's satisfied in himself, therefore we're satisfied in ourself. That's not going to happen. Are they? Leslie. There's a limited amount of doors that somebody's going to get it right. I guess it's, if they were in Tito's place, then they'd have a problem, right? So I think he had 1,000 rooms or something. Yes.
Maharaj kind of says that dissatisfaction is just that we are not Krishna conscious, or could be in devotional service, fully Krishna conscious devotee be dissatisfied. Is that possible?
What's to be dissatisfied about?
Like, let's say, dissatisfied with his service. Let devotee himself is like wants to improve, for example. He's not satisfied.
With his service. But is that, does that give you a sense of dissatisfaction?
No.
Then? What's the problem? So in other words, spiritual dissatisfaction is not a problem. Mm. Because spiritual life is so wonderful, serving Krishna is so nice, that one's never satisfied and that one wants, now is ready to stop. One always wants to do more and more. Mm. But it doesn't give that sense of dissatisfaction here where you lose your identity. Right? What does it mean here? Why is dissatisfaction a problem in the material world? Because when you're dissatisfied, then that means you're not getting the results from your endeavor. Hmm. So what does that do? That puts a doubt on your position as an identity. Hmm. Right? Am I the person that can do all the things? Am I the can-do person? Right? And so if I'm not and I identify I am, I'm going to, my identity is lost, so then I'm going to become insecure. Right? Then when you're insecure, then you can't function in anything. That's why you see if someone loses their that drive in one area, it tends to affect all the other areas. Right? Because it's an identity. Or it's okay, they throw themselves into their work because they can't function at home, or they just stay at home because they can't function at work, or, you know what I'm saying? You know, the kid just goes to the skateboard park because, you know, at school he can't function, you know, so he has to do something of substance, right? Is that something? So, but in Krishna consciousness, then you're being absorbed in that and not being satisfied in that, that you want to do more and more. What's your identity? It's not a trick question.
Dasana, dasana.
Yes, servant of the servant, right? So, being servant of the servant, that identity is there, and therefore then one continues on in that service. So, you don't become insecure. In fact, you become more and more that this is what I want to do. You do it, it's not you want to do more. So, it has the opposite. That's the point. The spiritual has the opposite effect. of the material.
Yes, thank you very much.
What is the role of the identity in this preaching movement? Like when we join, we said, you know, that as always we are far beyond, and like that people couldn't really relate. Now it's kind of a, so in terms of Varnanda,
people still can't relate. So you know, we go beyond, they can't relate, we come down below. The point is that.
Yeah. What do you look at?
It means, the thing is we're servant of Krishna. That's the identity. And then as servant of Krishna, then how we're absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So what role do we play in Krishna consciousness? So I, as a soul, I am servant of Krishna. So I'm going to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness. So how do I know what to do? Therefore, the Shastras recommend, the Acharyas, they give, you know, further detail and more specific. Like this, then we work with the, you know, whatever is the local authorities, then we have something to do. And then how do we choose what is there? According to our conditioning. So according to the nature that's there, then we're suited for different kinds of activities. You know, as a general principle. So then our identity is that I'm a devotee serving in this way, and this is the capacity in which I can do service. Because we have to fit into a living, dynamic environment. In the spiritual world, that's what they're doing. There, the services they render is based upon their particular expression of that pure love for Krishna. Right? But here, then we don't have that pure love. We are fortunate in that we're trying to develop, following the footsteps of the great devotees, that love for Krishna. But since we don't have that, then the form we are working with is whatever has been generated by our previous karma. So that means it's a field I can work in as a living entity, because I have the gross and subtle facilities for functioning in that capacity. Right? So therefore, I engage that in Krishna service. So if I'm humble, I'm tolerant, I respect others, not looking for respect, I can acknowledge and accept what is the particular condition that I have and how to use it. But if we haven't come to that point, we're not humble, we don't respect others, we don't have that tolerance, then there's always the things, I want a position that I feel is better for me according to my position and prestige. Therefore, people then want to go against the Varnashram because, oh, that's archaic, meaning I don't want to do that. It's never archaic, it's eternal. That's why it's called Sanatana Dharma. Like that. You know, even the Hindus know that. It's called Sanatana Dharma Ki Jai. You know, it's just standard. All the rah-rah Hindus, they'll all say that. They all understand. It's an eternal position. Not that this body is, but the principles of it is eternal. But they don't actually understand the full meaning of Sanatana Dharma. The real meaning of Sanatana Dharma is that engaging your nature in the Lord's service, that's eternal. So it's the devotional part that makes it eternal. But we do a duty according to what we have now. So that's it. So whatever it is, it doesn't matter. Krishna accepts any of that. We make the distinction, Krishna won't accept this, Krishna won't accept that. This, why? Because I don't accept it, Krishna can't accept it. You know, I accept it, of course Krishna accepts it. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're offering this, Krishna won't accept that. Why not? Because I won't accept it. But if I accept it, then, it's the bob, it's the move, or not, you know, it's not about the rules, it's the, you know, but on something else that they don't accept, Krishna won't accept that, that's nonsense, it's not. So who's it actually about? Right? So when we make it that it's about serving Krishna, then that whatever position we're in becomes devotional service. So it's like the iron and fire. So we're taking the consciousness, we're taking the conditioned nature, gross and subtle, and engaging Krishna's service. Therefore, like iron is in fire, then we take on that quality. Because the jiva is tatasta. So that means then the tatasta energy then puts the jiva into a position where they are in contact with all the energies. And in that position, then they may choose. And, you know, if we're here in the material world, generally means we made the wrong choice. Right? You know, is that so? So those living entities that have made this wrong choice, then they're here. And then some who haven't made the wrong choice, then they come here to preach. You know, the acharyas, they come here to preach. They're from there, they come here to preach. So, but they take up the roles according to whatever situation they're in. And then accordingly, then that's how they preach. So that's what we're trying to do, is that take whatever our conditioning and our consciousness and absorb it in the fire of Krishna consciousness, or in the Sankirtan movement. And in this fire of the Sankirtan movement, then everything becomes purified, everything becomes perfect. So it doesn't matter what it is. Because in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, he had all groups. You know, it's like Srup Damodar is a Brahmin, right? Gadadhar Pandit's a Brahmin. So they're all, you know, his close associates. But so is Ramananda Rai, who's a Shudra, and Kolabeta Shudhar, who's a Shudra. So it doesn't matter, you know. And then all so many of these others, Vasudev Datta, and this and that. So they're all Vaishyas, you know. So it doesn't matter if it's connected to the Lord; it becomes perfect, you know. And then we see, is what Lord Chaitanya says: he had 2.5 intimate associates. Yeah, it's been a long time since I've heard that. So, who they were, was that Ramananda Rai? Sikhi Mahiti?
And the sister.
But also Sikhi Mahiti's sister.
Yeah. Yes.
Like that. So she's half. She's the half.
Malini, I think it is.
Yeah, she's the half. I think she was, yeah. No, yeah. So she's, and their child was Kali Kanapur? Or it's one of those, you know, Beda Vyas or Malays. So, but she's half because you can't actually interact like you can with the others, so they're full. It's not that the closeness is not the same, but in practical interaction, it'll be half what you can do with the others. So that means is that even there, as a woman, then it doesn't stop the aspect of the closeness to the Lord. So it doesn't matter what one's position is in Varnashram. If one is connected to the Lord, it's perfect. But the form of it, what you're going to use and express it, that's going to have a difference. Does that make sense? You have to be able to tell the difference. Because otherwise, if you can't, then how are you going to function? Right? Does that make sense? If we can't tell what's the floor and what's the wall, and everybody comes in, puts the mat on the wall, you know, goes to get the books, the mat's down on the floor, picks up the mat, puts it back on the wall. You know, you can do that all day. Right? But once you know that, okay, here's the floor, then you put your mat down there, then you sit down. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that one just identifies what it is and uses it, then it's perfect, because it's all Krishna, it's all Krishna's creation. But we're just saying, oh, this part of Krishna's creation is better than that part. And that's based on our interpretation of what's better. What we think we'll get more benefit from, rather than just how Krishna says. Because everybody gets their benefit. Confirm. Okay. Everyone is hankering after peace of mind and self-satisfaction. But these can only be achieved by becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. Right? There isn't another process. People want this. Everybody's endeavoring for this. Only by becoming a devotee. That means they can get that satisfaction and self-satisfaction, peace of mind, by being a pure devotee. And then how will they apply that pure devotion in whatever position they're in? Right? It doesn't matter what the position, whatever position. King Prithu's statements in previous verses regarding his vast knowledge and perfect devotional service are justified here, for he is considered best among all Mahatmas. In Bhagavad Gita 9:13, Sri Krishna speaks of Mahatmas in this way. Mahatmanas tumam partha daivin prakritim ashvita. Janayant yana manaso yatva bhuta din avyayam. Ajantyananya manaso. O son of Prita, those who are not deluded, the great souls, are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. So, because they know if everything's Krishna, it's all connected to Krishna. They can see everything in relation to Krishna. Therefore, then, they're never deluded, right? You can be, only be deluded if you see something in connection with Maya, right? But if you see everything in connection with Krishna, then where's the Maya? Because right? Wherever Krishna is, there's no Maya. Does that make sense? So, when you see a situation, and you see that in connection to Krishna, how to please Krishna, then there's no delusion. If you see the situation, you see there's an opportunity for engaging the senses to please yourself, that's delusion. Right? Because the sense, our senses can't be satisfied separately than Krishna. Right? The example given of the leaves of the tree and the roots. You water the root, then the leaves are satisfied. You water the leaves, it doesn't work. The Mahatmas are not under the clutches of the illusory energy, but are under the protection of the spiritual energy. Because of this, the real Mahatmas always engage in devotional service of the Lord. Prithumars exhibited all the symptoms of a Mahatma. Therefore, he is mentioned in this verse as Duryo Mahatam, best of the Mahatmas. Okay, then, oops. Okay, 50. Being self-satisfied, Maharaj Prithu executed his duties as perfectly as possible, according to the time and his situation, strength and financial position. His only aim in all his activities was to satisfy the absolute truth. In this way, he duly acted. Maharaj Prithu was a responsible monarch, and he had to execute the duties of a Kshatriya, a king and a devotee at the same time. Being perfect in the Lord's devotional service, he could execute his prescribed duties with complete perfection as befitted the time and circumstance and his financial strength and personal ability. But here we have time, circumstances, fine. So it always has to include yourself. When you say time, place, and circumstance, you have to include yourself. Because we're part of the, if we're going to be involved, then we're part of that. So then that means your financial, your physical, whatever it is involved, intellectual or emotional, or whatever is one's position, that's what's then involved in that. That always has to be considered. If we just say, oh, the situation and what can I do, then either if it's not your duty, yes, then what can you do? You're not involved, then what's the problem? But if it is your duty, then you have to be involved. You have to put in the effort. You can't change because it's difficult. No, that goes with it. That goes with the nature. Someone has a nature that means they can handle, as we said before, certain difficulties. And then certain other difficulties, that's where they can apply. Right? They can handle the negative difficulties that come and they can deal with the positive. Because even something's positive, still it's work. So it's a, you know, so it's like someone has a nice car, so driving the car is still work. You still have to push the pedals and turn the wheel. If you say, no, but the Google car will drive for you, you still have to type in the destination, or at least tell it where you're going. You have to put in the work. So the main work will have been buying the car. You know, you're paying every month to Google to maintain so that you don't, you know, could you imagine halfway out in the middle of the Gobi Desert and your subscription to their Google map thingy runs out, you know, and then you have to, you know, go online but there's no things there. You walk. You know, it's not like that. So everything's got its price. So the price you can handle, the difficulties that come with it, then it works. Everything's work. Nothing's not work. In this regard, the word karmani in this verse is significant. Peter Mars's activities were not ordinary, but they were in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Rupa Goswami's advice that things which are favorable to devotional service should not be rejected, nor should activity favorable for devotional service be considered ordinary work or fruit of activity. For example, an ordinary worker conducts business in order to earn money for a sense gratification. A devotee may perform the same work in exactly the same way, but his aim is to satisfy the Supreme Lord. Consequently, his activities are not ordinary. So we have to always consider devotional service is not ordinary, because otherwise we say, well, his devotions are never being practical, is that the practical is the real thing, the substance, then devotional service is ordinary. But, you know, we're having a discussion about management, we never bring up about Krishna. It's because we take a Krishna, that's ordinary. And management, now this is the special, this is the topic, this is the theme. No, Krishna consciousness is the actual special and the theme. But we're applying that through management in relationship to. So how to be Krishna conscious, how to engage management in Krishna service. So that's what he's able to do. He's able to... Because the two, it's not a problem. One takes the physical and mental work, intellectual work, to get it done. Right? So body, mind, and words have to be engaged. But devotional service means the consciousness is engaged. So it's not that it's a separate effort. It's not that I physically engage in one and physically engage in the other, and that's all there is. Devotional service is the consciousness. So the consciousness means that I can be doing the activity, whatever is recommended or favorable to devotional service, and have the consciousness of, and be Krishna conscious. So, yes?
Devotional service is consciousness. And at the same time, why did Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur eliminate the 64 arts?
Why did he eliminate them?
No, illuminate. Why did he...
Illuminate.
Yes, why did he describe them?
Oh, why did he describe them?
Yes.
Because you can use them, they're favorable for Krishna consciousness.
So in that case, would the art precede the consciousness?
No, the art is the medium you use to express the consciousness.
Right.
So it's just like the occupation.
Yeah.
It's being used to... express Krishna consciousness. So that's why it says that those activities that are favorable for Krishna consciousness that we do. Right? So it's already been mentioned that performance of your duties in Varna and Ashram are favorable. Right? But now within that, because there may be so many duties, ones that we find favorable for Krishna consciousness, that's what we'll use. So the acharyas have recommended. So then we're using in that way. So let's say like performing a Karmakanda Yajna, that is, you know, specifically Kamika, we may not be doing that because generally speaking it wouldn't be favorable for Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Like that. But it's not that it can't be done in Krishna consciousness, like we see Priyavrata and some of these other kings that Preacher Mars did, I think it was expected before, and we'll see in the next two cantos, of how these great kings, they were performing their duties because that's expected from them. Like doing the Rajasuya sacrifice, you could say is kamyaka. It's sources material desire because you don't have to do it. You can be a king, go your whole life and not do it. It's not like, you know, going to court in the morning. That's something the king has to do. This is something he could go, you know, lifetimes and not do. But, so doing it means you want a specific result. But for Yudhishthira Maharaj, he saw it as an opportunity that since in the Rajasuya, the specialty of that is then you have to worship whoever's the greatest person in the assembly, that he can invite Krishna, get Krishna's association, and at the same time, worship Krishna in front of all the other personalities, because he's going to have all the demigods, all the great sages, all the kings of the world. Everybody's going to be there. You know, it's a big event. So in front of everyone, he can establish that Krishna is the supreme worshipable person, deity. Right? So for him, then performance of this, even though all the rituals, mantras and all that and all the detail will be exactly the same as if it was being done from the material point of view, it's not karmakanda anymore. It may be described there, but it's not karmakanda. Now it's devotional service. That's what we're saying, it's not ordinary anymore. So we have the things, no, the work itself is what makes it, defines it. You're doing that work, then it's that work. No, but no. You're doing something in connection with devotional service, it takes on the quality of devotional service. But how do we define? Because then we can say, oh, I can use anything. What's recommended? Right? Since we don't know what actually is devotional service, so we don't know what is actually favorable for devotional service. Therefore, if we make a decision, it may not turn out all right. Just like, let's say, if you know, you let the five-year-old make the menu, right? There's going to be a lot of candy. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So, they don't know actually what's good for health, right? They just know it tastes nice. So, we don't know what's good for devotional health, we just know what we have the taste for. That's why then we follow recommendations. So he says that he's performing the activity, but he says he's performing the duties of a kshatriya. And then within that, what is favorable for devotional service? So the main thing that's favorable for devotional service is the proper consciousness, because that's what makes it devotional service. So much of the time, it doesn't matter what, if it's within the recommended duties of Varnashram, it's generally never a problem. So the only time it becomes a problem is if doing that activity, we can't be Krishna conscious. Then you would say it's unfavorable. But basically, that's the whole point of Varnashram, is that there's nothing within it that's defined that's unfavorable. You can see Krishna in every aspect of it. But, you know, especially as Vaishnavas and especially as Gaudiyas, then we take a much simpler approach. So then so many things that may be really important for others, even though they're devotees, we ourselves use a very simple form. But the point is we still follow all the duties. We just may do it in a simpler form. Does that make sense? But it's not that we neglect the duties. You have to know what the principle is and then be engaged in that activity based on that principle. Then if there's a simpler form, then you know what to do. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like, let us say, one's hungry, and one's in a facility that is, okay, you know, let's say one's in Puri, one has, you know, contacts or this or that, and one can get all these varieties of Jagannath Prasad, so one might have, you know, 5, 10, 15 different preparations, right? But the whole point is you're going to eat, right? And now you're remembering the Lord, by His mercy you're getting Prasad, this, that, right? And so the devotional service is that attitude is there and that you're taking prasad. The detail may be is the kind of food you're eating and this and that and the quality of it. Now let's say you're traveling on the train and you're hungry and you go out into the station and there's not a whole lot out there. You know, like there's one thing. So then that is gained, then by Krishna's grace, you're having this, then remembering Krishna, you're eating. So the spiritual benefit's the same. But the difference is it's only one preparation instead of 15. So that's a simpler form. Why? Because you know the importance of eating. Now, if you were going by simply taste, you might not buy that one preparation and might not eat. And then you'll have all the effects of not eating. Does that make sense? You'll become weak, you'll become tired, all these different things. But if you understand the importance of eating, and that eating is for the purpose of nourishment, therefore then you'll find something that gets as close to that as possible, and it's as simple. Does that make sense? So that's the difference. So So you can have something very elaborate and very simple, but if you connect it all to Krishna, then it doesn't matter. They're the same. So then these very elaborate things that are there, if they're favorable and we would be normally doing them, then we use them. But if not, you can use the simpler form. But you have to know what you're doing to be able to cut it down. You can't just say, oh, we just chant, we don't follow the rules. That's a very ineffective way to decide what you're going to follow or not. Because amazingly is that if it's connected with ourselves, we follow so many rules. And when it's connected with, you know, Varnashram and Krishna and you know, the standard austerities and customs of devotional service, that's where we cut everything out. So in other words, we leave our conditioning and drop devotional service. That's not even in our condition, we add Krishna to it because we've already made the distinction. These activities are devotional, these activities are practical. So what devotional I choose, I'll do. But all the practical ones, I'll take the whole package. I don't pick and choose. I don't decide, I'm not paying my mortgage. You pay the mortgage. But we chant, we don't follow the rules. Why are you paying the mortgage? You know, you're giving all that money to the dirty, stinky, smelly karmis, you know, why you're doing that? You're supporting all the sinful activities. You know, this is nonsense. Why are you doing that? Is anybody saying that? Have you ever heard one devotee say that? No, never. But if we take it over to the, you know, recommendations in sadhana, then you may hear all kinds of stuff like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then it first starts with what are the duties, what's recommended, Shastra says, then what our acharyas say, and then how, you know, applying that to our situation, how then it works for us. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll break here. For, yeah. Not what he's actually doing. That's the uniqueness. Because the sadhana bhakti then will connect, sometimes it's connected, sometimes it's not, sometimes remembering, sometimes not. You know, and then when it gets to a major point, it's more steady. But then we see with Pitu Maharaj, then it's always, it's consistently on that platform. Right? So then that's what we call pure devotional service, because it's always connected to Krishna, always favorable to Krishna. So not that he didn't do all his kingly duties, he just did them all in connection with Krishna. Just as Arjuna, who was a warrior, had to fight to satisfy Krishna, Pitu Maharaj performed his royal duties as king for the satisfaction of Krishna. Indeed, whatever he did as emperor of the whole world was perfectly befitting a pure devotee. It is therefore said by a Vaishnava poet, Vaishnavara Kriya Mudra Vigyena Bhuchai. No one can understand the activities of a pure devotee. A pure devotee's activities may appear like ordinary activities, but behind them there is profound significance. Right? So this is the reason we're bringing that out. You can also turn on over there, unless the lights create so much heat and not no one can handle it. You know, brings it from 14 degrees up to 14 and a half. And then just considering running out of the room, jumping into the creek. In fact, if we had the class down at the creek, that would be even better. Yeah. But I think we'll give it a miss this year, so. See why Prabhupada is bringing up this not ordinary? Because the activity itself is a standard activity. Like what he's doing, the activities of a king are standard. All kings do this. But the difference is he's doing it connected to Krishna. That's what makes it unique. That's what makes it Krishna conscious. Right? So sadhana and that's direct activity. So that the activity is not ordinary and it's connected to Krishna. But then you have all the other activities of Varnashram that they themselves are for maintaining the conditioning. But when they're done in connection with Krishna, then they take on that transcendental nature, they become devotional service. Right? So one would say, oh, that's ordinary activity. But the point is the body is ordinary. So anything to do with the body is ordinary. But because it's connected to Krishna, that's what makes it special. Does that make sense? So those things that are more obvious, like when we're cleaning the temple, so we get a bucket, we get a rag, and we wipe the floor, then people say that's devotional service. But if you go around the city, there's millions of people who get a bucket and a rag and wipe the floor. And it's not devotional service. So, therefore, just as cleaning the temple floor, even though you may be doing an ordinary activity in the technique, its effect and its purpose is not ordinary. It's spiritual, to please Krishna. So in the same way, the duties of Varnashram then fall into the same category. When they're connected to Krishna, then they become valuable. If they're not connected to Krishna, they don't have that value. Does that understand? A pure devotee's activities may appear like ordinary activities, but behind them is a profound significance, the satisfaction of the Lord. In order to understand the activities of a Vaishnava, one has to become very expert. Maharaj, so expert meaning that you know the scriptures, you act according to scriptures. It means if you're knowing scriptures, you apply the scriptures, then you can start to perceive. Right? So even just an expert, it works. Not even if you're not a master. But an expert means you see according to the Shastra, you apply according to the Shastra. Now, whether you have you have an understanding according to Shastra, that's an expert. But master means then there's the realization. Right? So, even an expert then can start to perceive the aspects of devotional service, because they're applying, they're trying for pure devotional service. Then they can appreciate others' effort in devotional service. Otherwise, one will just see it as ordinary work. That's the problem with the smartas. The smartas who worship Vishnu, they consider the form of Vishnu to be, you know, material. So their actual dealing with Vishnu is not devotional. They'll perform the activities of devotional service, and they'll even have the problem, try to have a, you know, the recommended attitude. But their whole purpose is that through this bhakti of worshiping Vishnu, then they'll get their results in karma or liberation. They'll get elevation of the heavenly planets, they'll get liberated with something else. So their application into devotional service is actually temporary, it's not permanent. Right? But because they follow all the rules, and they follow all those things connected in that way, what's recommended, then when they see the Vaishnava, so they'll call themselves Vaishnavas, because they worship Vishnu. So when they see the actual Sampradaya Vaishnavas, many times they'll think they're not actually Vaishnavas because they don't follow all the technical rules they do. Because they don't understand that devotion to Vishnu is the real point that makes it devotional. They think it's the ritual connected to Vishnu makes it devotional service. Does that make sense? So that's important to. Yes.
I think what you just said, in Western philosophy, there is an ongoing conflict between deontology and consequentialism. Consequentialism is, I think, what you just said, that we judge or categorize things according to the result. Mm-hmm. If it's done for Krishna, the consequence is to please Krishna, that's the real thing. And the deontology says that the value of good or bad things lies is inherent in activity. It's, as you said, this smart, not necessarily smart, but these devotees who pay attention to the ritual, their understanding is that the ritual itself, the activity, has inherent value, that this is devotional service. It's not the consequence, the result of pleasing Krishna. Is it correct to understand?
You could say, taking it from that approach, then you could say yes. That you could say that would be a difference. But if you go deeper, then everything has its the ontology. Everything has its inherent nature. But where does that inherent nature come from? That's where they don't go to. So for us, it's right on both sides, because it has its inherent nature. In other words, worship of Vishnu has its inherent nature of how you do the ritual, but at the same time as what is pleasing to Vishnu. Because if you're worshiping Vishnu, what's the inherent nature of that interaction? It should be devotion. So for us, from both perspectives, that's the point, is that you'll find that if we discuss the philosophy on this level, then you'll find those who are liberal and those who are conservative, both will agree with it. Right? It's only when you get down to the details that then people have their own definitions of particular words and situations. Then they will, because what's happened is the ontology we have is inherent nature. Is that meaning that it's defined by us or it's defined by the eternal?
Well, in Western philosophy, it's all speculative. So
that's the whole thing. Yes. So for us, is that definition of inherent only comes as the fourth stage of applying inherent nature. Well, they'll start there because it's an ascending process. For us, it's a descending process. So inherent means it's already there in the words of the Veda, which is spoken by the Lord. It's the Lord's breath. You know, so that's non-different from the Lord. Then you have, that's the Shruti. Then you have the Smritis, which means the conversations of great personalities and their realizations and practices of the Vedic verses. Then that's what we know as tradition. Then you have the commentaries of the Acharyas and great personalities, how then they've applied it, because that's closer to our position. You know what I'm saying? So Prahlad Maharaj is speaking, right? So that's Smriti. What is he speaking from? Shruti. Right? But now Prahlad Maharaj and his position and all that, then we're not exactly always in that position. So if we take things too external, you know, by that ontological thing, then we'll think, oh, we can only practice that surrender to Krishna if, you know, we are in a place where there's all kinds of elephants trying to step on us, or a bunch of snakes trying to bite us, or our father is throwing us off the mountain, someone else can't throw us off the mountain, you know, it can't be our brother, or, you know, like that, it has to be our father, you know, he has to be king, and, you know, it means we'll make so many different things that will, that. And so we won't actually catch what's the devotional service. Therefore, the commentaries of the Acharyas and how the great personalities, you know, that we're in touch with, how they practice it. Does that make sense? That's the third thing of understanding inherent nature. And then fourth is the application to yourself, is that how that applies to us. So that means taking those instructions of the other three and applying it to our nature. So that's where you combine them, for the purpose of pleasing the Lord. Right? So now you can do that process and not do it as devotional service. Then we would say that it's a problem, because unless it's devotional service, then it's a waste of time. And that would be your, what was the other,
the ontology and consequentialism.
So then according to consequentialism, then we would say it's not complete. But the point is the ontology is, it's Krishna defines the natures of everything, not us. We only have to see what is our nature that's already been defined, and using our power of discrimination, then apply the ontology that's created by the Lord to our position of ontology. You understand? So it includes what these other two schools are saying, and more. Is that, you know, so that's always the thing. So one's the bed, one's the bath, and we're the beyond. Right? Does that make sense? So that's how it is. Yeah. Okay. Maharaj Prithu did not allow himself to function outside the institution of four varnas and four ashrams. Although as a Vaishnava, he was a Paramahamsa, transcendental to all material activities, right? So we see here is that we're being introduced in here already in the fourth canto, because this is the discussion of Maitreya, Muni, to Vidura. So Vidura's point was this: I've heard all the Vedic literatures and studied the Vedic literature, right? You know, as Dharmaraj, naturally. So then, but the point comes up is that he wants to hear them in connection with the Lord. So he wants to see how at every point, in every situation, the Lord's connected. That brings about this discussion. So we already see in the fourth canto that we have the activities of the pure devotees, but it's basically we're seeing that the pure devotional service is there and the activities are there. So it's kind of balanced. In the third canto, like that, then we're seeing examples of people who are following the Varnashram system, but there's more, more emphasis put on the Varnashram side. But it's all about devotional service. But we have more detail there, so we see the connection. Now here we'll see 4th, 5th, 6th of great personalities, how they applied Varnashram. And so you can see what are the details of Varnashram, and you can see their performance of devotional service. But you don't so much see how the mentality, their mentality at all the whole time. But you know that it's there, it's being explained. But when you start getting the 7th canto, 7, 8, 9, they'll be emphasizing the consciousness of the great personalities and not the activities. The activities are the same. You understand? It's just where the emphasis is. So in this case, like up to this point, now we hear he's a Paramahamsa. The other ones, we already know they're Paramahamsas, like with Priyavrata. And then how he'll, as a Paramahamsa, go into this. Does it make sense? Because when it starts off, you just see that Prithu is a king. But as you go, you see how he's a great devotee. But with Priyavrata, he's already a Paramahamsa. Now as a Paramahamsa, he's going into household life and that of a king. So that's what you're learning is how he maintains that consciousness. Right? So Prithu Maharaj has that consciousness, but we're seeing how he performs all the duties nicely as a king, so you can get that perfect example of how a king behaves, but as a pure devotee. Then you'll see the others, that it will be more emphasis on the consciousness and the various situations they're in and how they apply that. Does that make sense? So here it's like, as a king, how he deals, as a Krishna conscious king. The other one is about the Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? It's subtle. He remained at his position as a Kshatriya to rule the world, and at the same time remained transcendental to such activities by satisfying the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Concealing himself as a pure devotee, he externally manifested himself as a very powerful and dutiful king. In other words, none of his activities were carried out for his own sense gratification. Everything he did was meant for the satisfaction of the senses of the Lord. This is clearly explained in the next verse. So that's why it says that he did not allow himself to function outside the institution of four varnas or four ashramas. Because being a pure devotee was to connect everything to the Lord. These are the nice things to connect. A pure devotee thinks about the Lord. And so if you're in a position in which these things can be offered in its natural state, you would do that. Only if you're in a situation where you can't get these ideal arrangements, then sticking to the principles, in this case of Kshatriya Dharma, then he would apply himself. Does that make sense? So there's never the thing that he drops his consciousness to match his surroundings. The consciousness always is the same. But the performance of the activity will then match the surrounding. So one could say is, it's Kali Yuga, we should follow the things of Kali Yuga. But we have to remember is that it's Krishna's Kali Yuga, not the West's Kali Yuga. We have to be very, very clear on that. So that means Krishna's laws still apply. It's just that in Kali Yuga, people don't follow it. It's not that they won't get the reaction, they just don't follow it. We're taking it as just normal life. No, it's you know, going to hell in a bucket, in one of those buckets like we have, you know. It's not even a nice bucket, right? So that things we have to understand is that he never breaks the Varnashram rules. Now the forms, that means there's the principle of the Varnashram. There's the rules and all that, but then there's the natural form of it. So when it's available, the natural form, we'll follow that. When it's not, we'll follow another. But it's never that we're not following Varnashram. This idea that, oh, we don't have to follow it. Where does Prabhupada ever say we don't have to follow it? Where does the scripture ever say we don't have to follow it? You understand? People say it all the time. Where did they get it from? They look, means as a... as a Vikarmi, right? Who knew about Varnashram before joining Krishna consciousness? Right? A handful of academics has heard the word. Who knows about Varnasha? Who would even know what the details of it are? Who would know the explanation? So the only reason we know is because we've learned it from Srila Prabhupada. Why would he explain it? And why would he spend so much purports explaining it if it was something that we just didn't do or didn't have to do? Wouldn't that be a waste of time? You could cut down the Bhaktivedanta purports by half easily if you dropped out all the elements of Varnasha. So if you did that, that means how much shorter it would be, and then Prabhupada could have finished that and moved on to other works? Right? No? Why would you waste your time? Yes?
I said here that most quickly manifested some as a great powerful king.
Yes.
But then you have the Calvinists. They had the idea that when you manifest opulence, that's the proof of your elevation.
When you manifest?
Yeah, as a devotee, when you manifest opulence, that's the proof of the grace of God, and that you are actually especially...
It means that we do have that. Yeah. It means, in other words, that point is explained in the Tasta with Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj. I think that would be in the 8th canto. So, 8th to 9th? Something like that.
8th
canto. So then, in there, there's a discussion on this very point. So then it's brought out that Krishna says, it means he's making, the point's being made that when the devotee has material desire, Krishna removes the facility. Or if he fulfills it, he does it in such a way to remove that desire. In other words, he'll fulfill the desire, but you shouldn't ask again. You know, the desire will be, means that one's interest in the material is fulfilled. And so then one moves on from there. But that only happens because it's connection with Krishna. Because the karmis are trying to fulfill the desire and they're not moving forward. But because the devotee connects to Krishna, even though it's materialistic, then that desire gets dealt with, but in such a way that you lose the material impetus. Right? So but you're left with the interest in Krishna. So then that's the aspect of Hari where Krishna can take everything away. So if we have material desire, he tends to take everything away. Right? But then he says that's not the highest sign of his mercy. Then higher than that is that devotee who doesn't have material desire and he can engage all material facility in Krishna's service, then Krishna gives so much. Right? So that aspect you can say yes is there, but it also has the other. So, because when you're dealing with Krishna, everything's good. If God's all good, then that means him taking away and him giving. You know, it was it. The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away, right? So that means both are good. Not that one's good, one's not, but it shows a higher ability. Now, the symptom would be not just that he gave that, but is the person able to maintain that and maintain that devotional attitude? Would we see with the facility, with that extra facility, if they get distracted from devotional service, then that aspect of that distraction, that's not the Lord's grace. That's Maya's grace. Because then by getting distracted, then you'll become miserable and then you'll turn to the Lord again, because then the point is that if you're getting distracted, then how will you take shelter of the Lord? Right? You took shelter before because you're miserable, then so much facility came. Now if you get distracted again from the Lord, then by taking away that facility, then you'll surrender to the Lord again. So then it's working on that principle of him taking away as his person. But if by getting, then one can use it all in Krishna's service and do so many nice things, then that's sustainable. Then you could say that's Krishna's mercy. From that side, the more advanced level. Otherwise, then, you know, they want so much, you get. And then you'll give, but it's done in such a way that you'll lose interest, because when he takes it away, then you'll see how unimportant it is.
Well, like a person like Kolaris Afrika, was, I mean, really poor in that sense. And, mm-hmm. But it was rich in his solution. But is it like his position is like that because he can't handle it?
No, it's the pure devotees is why get involved. Because for his service to Lord Chaitanya, he doesn't need more facility. So why get involved more? You know what I'm saying? So it's just a matter of the individual and how their particular service will unfold. So it's not a matter of that. These are the eternal associates, because for them it doesn't matter. See, it only matters for us. This aspect of Hari, where he takes or gives, it's only important to us. We want him to give, not take away. But for these great personalities like Yudhishthira, you could say basically, yeah, how much is lost? Who can claim that they have gained or lost more than Maharaj Yudhishthira? Right? No one can say. You know, I think you could probably bring up Harishchandra, but then I'm not so sure about the devotional, you know, scene in there. What's being brought out with him is his character, like that greatness of him. So, but the principle is as a devotee, no one's lost more or gained more than him. So we can't say that our situation is different. Right, as a conditioned living entity, we like to think that we're special. And so therefore my situation is special. No one else can understand it. It doesn't apply. All the rules of the Vedas don't apply because I'm unique and special. So that's why you have these examples of these great personalities. Because for them, whether they're in Indraprastha with all opulence or whether they're out in the forest with nothing, they're fine. They're only anxiety about not having any facility was how do they maintain all these Brahmins who are coming with them. The Brahmins said, don't worry, we'll take care of ourselves. Means they'll go out begging and all that, or they're such great yogis, they can fast and they don't care. Like that. But he is a king and he's supposed to take care of the Brahmins. Therefore he wants to serve the Brahmins. Then he does that austerity to get that plate from the sun god that then he can feed them all. But other than that, you don't hear of any other opulence that they have. It means as kshatriyas, they can take their weapons with them. They can't say you can't take your weapons. You know? In fact, the point is their clothes, their, you know, all that kind of stuff, that's left. They're wearing all their, you know, their clothes made from, you know, from the bark of the trees, and they have their weapons, and Draupadi's plate, and that's it. So that's all that's required for the service. So, and they're perfectly happy like that. You know, as long as they have the association of each other and all that, they're happy. You know, when Arjuna goes, then they live my anxiety. But when he comes back, when Krishna comes, when Vidura visits, or like that, then they're very happy. For them, it doesn't matter. You know, but for the citizens, they're not going to be Krishna conscious under Duryodhana. Since they're there, they could do it, they're still at the age when it would be proper to do it, therefore then they will perform their duties as a king. Right? But as soon as it comes of age where then they don't have to do these things anymore, then immediately they go to divorce. So that's the whole point, is that duties are done, one doesn't go outside the institution of four varnas and four ashram, and according to what functions in your service, you know, for the consciousness you have and the position you're in. But then you have to know the system to know how to situate yourself. So it requires that knowledge. So that's what it means. One becomes very expert. Because one knows the Varnashram system, one knows devotional service, you know how they go together. You know how devotional service accommodates anything else. How to connect that. So you can discriminate. But you don't make the statement that karmic activities and dekarmic activities are equal, that piety and sin are the same, and that, you know, you can use anything in devotional service because the soul is transcendental. Yeah, the soul by tattva is transcendental, but if its consciousness is not transcendental, you deal with sin, you pollute it. You deal with piety, then you can, and not connect to Krishna, you can get distracted. of dealing Krishna consciousness, then the piety won't distract you. But you can't say that even if you're Krishna conscious, dealing with impiety won't distract you. Because if you were Krishna conscious, why would you engage in piety? Because impiety means what Krishna doesn't like. Piety means what Krishna recommends. Impiety means what Krishna doesn't recommend. So why would you try to equalize karma and piety and impiety? That means then there's something wrong there. You know, so due to attachment, one's intelligence was not functioning. Right? Does that make sense? Because that's what it says. If there's attachment in Gita, then the intelligence is lost. So that's why then Naishkarmya is a stable platform. Right? When one is working on Nishkam Karma Yoga, that's steady because one is able to perform the duties without attachment. But if you're performing duties with attachment, then the problem is the intelligence may not always be used. Therefore, we may not always be engaged in devotional service. Does that sound like sense? Because the intelligent thing is to do devotional service. Does that sound like sense? So that's what's trying to be done. So he's a very powerful and dutiful king. But he's doing that because that's what it requires. If the king's not powerful, then the citizens will do whatever they like. Right? So what's the modern thing? Do whatever you like. Why? Because the government's actually not powerful. And then we make that into a philosophy. The Brahma, they will perform the brahminical duties within that. So there's so many aspects of that can be done. Right? It means the Brahma could be a yogic Brahma, he could just study and teach, he could do puja, he could do so many different duties. Does that make sense? Okay, so in the next verse this is all explained. 51. Maharaj Prithu completely dedicated himself to be an internal servant of the Supreme Personality Godhead, transcendental to material nature. Consequently, all the fruits of his activities were dedicated to the Lord, and he always thought of himself as the servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the proprietor of everything. Right? So that means whatever you're dealing with is Krishna's, not ours. And if it's Krishna's and not ours, that means it's going to change how we deal with it. Like if it's ours, we'll deal with one way, and if it's not ours, we'll deal with another. And if it's Krishna's, then we'll get the benefit of both, right? Because if it's not ours, we're detached. Right? But then the problem is we may not do anything. Well, if it's ours, we're attached and we'll do something. But devotional service means we get the benefit of both. We will endeavor with the same focus as if we were attached, but we're not attached. So that means Krishna gets the benefits of that, and we attain that transcendental position. And whatever you work for, then you get the results of that. So you get all aspects from that change in consciousness. Purport. The life and dedication of Maharaj Prithu in the transcendental loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead served as a good example of Karma Yoga. The term Karma Yoga is often used in Bhagavad Gita, and herein Maharaj Prithu is giving a practical example of what Karma Yoga actually is. So in other words, you're performing your activities, your duties within the Varnashram system simply to please Krishna. That's Karma Yoga. Now we see he's a pure devotee. Now those who are not pure devotees, they'll also function within the Varnashram system and perform Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga. But it may be mixed devotional service. So in other words, Karma Yoga can be pure devotion, or it can be mixed. Jnana Yoga also can be pure or mixed. Right? And so those are aspects of bhakti yoga, because bhakti yoga means the devotion to Krishna. Right? So in devotion to Krishna, we're using our intelligence, we're using the mind, we're using the senses. So if we're using the senses, it's called karma yoga. You're using the mind, it's called jnana yoga. You're using the intelligence, it's called jnana yoga. Jnana yoga. Right? Does that make sense? So these are all the different yogas. They're all part of bhakti, because bhakti means you're engaging body, mind, and words in the Lord's service. So all these three yogas are naturally included. But if, when we're looking at one aspect of the activities of the pure devotee, then we'll look at the karma yoga aspect. We're looking at the knowledge he has, or the jnana yoga aspect. Like with the four kumaras, we generally look at the jnana yoga aspect, not the karma yoga, because they don't really do anything on the, you know, material platform, right? They wander around naked, and they don't, you know, so it means there's not a whole lot to do. You never hear of them eating, you never hear of them anything, so just they go around and preach, so. Does that make sense? So there's, you won't use them as an example. You use them as an example of jnana yoga. Yeah. So with that. And I think Prahlad Maharaj is remembering, so jnana yoga. He always, that's his service, he always remembers the Lord. So even when he's on his own, you find him alone thinking, remembering the Lord. You know, so whatever he does, he remembers the Lord. That's his service. So he's the one that's perfect in remembrance, right? Everybody's in, you know, Sukadev Goswami and chanting, and Parikit Maharaj and hearing, Prahlad Maharaj and remembering, like this. So he's different devotees.
Could you kind of explain in this regard? I heard on your lectures on philosophical definitions that this statement, never forget, always remember, the first part is Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. Yeah, and then Jnana Yoga, always remember. How this is different? Never forget, always remember.
You could break it, an easier way to maybe break it down so that you can grasp is that always remembering is the primary aspect, never forget is the secondary. See, what makes us forget? Right, remembering Krishna makes us forget Krishna. We're so absorbed in ecstasy of Krishna that we fall unconscious and we're co-hanging up. In other words, it's secondary activities that distract us from remembering Krishna. Mm-hmm. So in other words, always remembering Krishna, that just means the consciousness is fixed on Krishna. Right, we arrange things so we always can do that. But so in the primary, it says secondary means we never forget means the arrangement of our secondary activities is such that it will remind us of Krishna. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, like we have a house, that's a secondary activity. But in the house, we put pictures of Krishna, the books are, you know, how you say, you know, we take the War and Peace and, you know, I give it to the local library and then we put in Bhagavatam and, you know, stuff like that. So then we can, it makes us remember Krishna. You know, how we set the place up, how we do things like this and that. It's that, yeah. So like that, we make a distinction.
I'd be very grateful if you could, along this line of remembrance, if you could elaborate on the quality of remembrance for a nitya siddha versus a twit like myself, a conditioned soul. Because, for example,
a twitya siddha.
A twitya siddha.
What's the difference in consciousness?
Well, the quality.
The quality.
I'm thinking about this remembrance, the quality of it, in terms of this debate about whether the soul has fallen from Vaikuntha Lok. Right. And in remembering.
Well, just as a general discussion, that conversation is not actually a quality conversation.
Right. Yes, I agree.
Good things. I think I just came across it today. This is a quote by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur from Chaitanya Bhagavat, Madhya Kanda, 1384. If that means anything to anybody. Okay. The moment the attracted souls are distracted, they glance towards Maya from Vaikuntha. So basically that means all discussions on where they fell from has just been answered. The moment the attracted souls are distracted, they glance towards Maya from Vaikuntha. At that time, the universe is created and material enjoyment overcomes the constitutional duties of the living entities belonging to the marginal potency of the Lord and makes them averse to Krishna. This aversion to Krishna induces the conditioned soul to become bewildered with incomplete thoughts of Ramana and Paramatma. Yeah, it means, in other words, we see here, okay, this house, we like the house, but actually that it gives shelter. You know, it's comfortable, I like it, you know, high ceilings, I consider that shelter. It's too low, it's, you know, one of these ones, you reach up, touch the ceiling, I don't feel comfortable. Like that, you know. I mean, unless you're Maria Antoinette, you can't reach up and touch the ceiling anyway, so she can have lower ceilings, yeah. But the point is it's actually you're dealing with Brahman, but there's an incomplete understanding. You just think it's the material. I like the wood, I like the, you know, the old, I like the tradition. You know, and someone else, I like the glass, the modern, you know, and stuff like that. So they don't understand that what they like is Brahman, Krishna's qualities, but they don't see it connected to Krishna. So it's an incomplete understanding. And even if they do take up the path of Jnana, they think that the Brahman is just Brahman. They don't know it's Krishna's effulgence. So it's incomplete. So in the material world, they always have an incomplete understanding of Brahman and Paramatma. Also Paramatma then is the Brahman in the form of the mode of goodness, so therefore it's a temporary aspect, therefore they'll merge in Brahman. When they merge into Paramatma, they merge into Brahman. So the Karmis, the Jnanis, the Yogis, they don't see the actual nature of, the complete nature of Brahman and Paramatma. Because if you do, then you have to see it in relationship to Bhagavan, Krishna. That is, he comes as the localized form as Paramatma, and he comes as, and he expands as his Brahman effulgence and pervades the cosmos, let alone the material world. Does that make sense? And so that these incomplete concepts, and they are covered by their individual material sentiments. So individually there. But the point is they glance towards Maya from Vaikuntha, because the Tattva means where the internal and external are together at the same time. That's the definition of tatasta. So if they're not both together at the same time, you don't have the spiritual and the material, how do you make a choice? Because if we say, you know, it's still the tatasta shakti that allows the living entity to be in the material body. Because otherwise the soul, why would it stay within a material body? The tatasta shakti holds it there. Because that's the interest of the living entity. Right? Otherwise, how would the two be together? They have nothing to do with each other. But the tatastha shakti is that potency that can hold the jiva in the material body. Right? But where's the choice? Are we seeing? Can we perceive material and spiritual? No. Only through practice we can. So that means we have to be in a place where the spiritual world is there and the material world is there, and we can see them both at once. Right? So, if you see it in connection with Krishna, then you see the spiritual. You see it not connected to Krishna, then it's material. Right? Krishna has, he manifests the spiritual realm due to his Ichha Shakti, his desire to enjoy, fulfill his desires. So therefore the Dham, the devotees and all, and devotional, their interactions and all their paraphernalia, this is all manifest by the Ichha Shakti because it pleases the Lord. Now, all those devotees, and they're going to do things. All those paraphernalia have a purpose, and they do things. So when you apply them, you know, into something, and they get results, that aspect is then the Kriya Shakti, right? The Kriya Shakti supports the Icha in that it's an activity. By performance of it, you get a result that's offered to Krishna, right? But now you have to have those things have to exist, and there have to be the mechanics. The inherent mechanics of those things, right? I mean, it's like we're saying, you have a bale fruit, so it's round. So round things can roll. That inherent nature, the round thing can roll, right? Is then the jnana shakti, the existence of everything, right? Then the kriya shakti is that you roll it, and by rolling it, it's fun. And then the icha shakti is that that fun is for Krishna. You understand? Okay? Now why we're getting into this is that what happens here when we glance across the Maya from Vaikuntha means we're seeing these spiritual personalities performing spiritual activities to please Krishna. So they're functioning under the Ichha Shakti with the support of the Jnana and Kriya Shakti. We don't see the Ichha Shakti. We only see the Jnana and Kriya. So we see the existence of things, and by performing activities with them, you get results from those things. And those things, then we see the value of them because they make us happy. That's seeing Maya. So even though you're seeing facilities, people, activities of the spiritual world, you're not seeing it as spiritual. So you're seeing it as material, so you're already seeing Maya. So that means now your birth in the material world has started. Does that make sense? So then, that means then you'll be transferred to the material world, and then we can just see, because all we see is that the Icha is me. We take it as ourselves, as I'm. It's my Icha. Therefore, then, how the world works, the Jnana and Kriya, is great as long as it satisfies me. So Krishna consciousness is switching it to, it satisfies Krishna. But the Jnana and Kriya don't change. The mechanics of them don't change. That's why then it's being brought out, is that Prita Maharaj is not performing ordinary activities, though we would take Varnashram as ordinary. But because he's doing connection with Krishna, it's not ordinary, it's devotional service. That's why then devotees get confused. Varnashram is mentioned as an ordinary activity, and it says Prita Maharaj is only engaged in devotional service. That means he just sits in the temple all day and chants japa. Right? They can't take it as, no, it's ordinary if it's not connected to Krishna. Once it's connected to Krishna, it's no longer ordinary. So since you're going to connect it to Krishna for Krishna's satisfaction, it's his Icha, not ours. Not we're Westerners, it's about our Icha. No, it's about Krishna's Icha. We're souls, we're Krishna's servant. That's the eternal nature. Right? So therefore, then we will pick those things that Krishna likes. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? So therefore it answers that the soul, that's how we get ourselves here, is by seeing the material world and not seeing the spiritual. So this consciousness that's being discussed here, that's then the thing that this movement is trying to teach. Like here it says, anyone can learn these methods simply by following examples of the members of the society. Right? So these methods of Karma Yoga and Bhakti Yoga are being broadcast all over the world by the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. Anyone can learn these. Right, by following the example. So taking the association of the devotees, that's what they do. So that organization of the International Society, that's what the managers and leaders do. But what are they doing? They're trying to manage it so that people can see the difference between our desire and Krishna's desire. Right? And therefore, then we will use the recommended activities to please Krishna as that medium. So if you're already doing a bona fide activity, you don't need to change it. Though, if you're not Krishna conscious, that bona fide activity is ordinary. Right? Because when we say ordinary, means generic, we mean the material world. But here we mean what's recommended, like Varnashram. Human. Vikarmic activities aren't ordinary. That's sin. That's below standard, so it's not ordinary. Ordinary means standard. Right? Below that, you can't call that. Is that
yeah.
You know, it's just like you have a plate of something and all that, it's just regular food. You know, that's just ordinary. Everybody eats that every day. You drop it on the ground, it's below standard. It's not ordinary anymore. But the dog will eat it, he's happy. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, the vikarmic things, these are the activities of the animals. But selected animals, certain animals eat meat, certain animals do this, you know, pigeons have sex 80 times a day. You know, nobody else does that. So that's the whole thing, is that they have their position, and for them that's normal. Right? So if we're taking the karmic activities and saying we're Westerners, this is normal, this is standard, it's the same as doing pious activities recommended in the Veda, then you should actually be saying, we're animals, we identify as animals, and we're not willing to give up this tendency or proclivity towards, you know, being an animal. And so therefore, within, you know, our animal, you know, position, then we'll serve Krishna. But it's about being an animal, not about being a devotee. So it's, you can't claim that they're even on the same level as the Kanaras and Kimpurushas, because they're animals, but they're interested in devotion and service. So they are not so refined. You know, like sometimes you see Hanuman do things, it's not so refined. But the point is he's just fully absorbed in the Lord. So it's pure devotional service. So he's engaged his animal nature in pure devotional service. So you think of him as a pure devotee, not as an animal. So when you identify as a devotee, think as a devotee, then that's what, you know, and pure devotional service is standard. That's what we're looking for. That's what the society is for. But if we say, no, I'm a Westerner, and therefore, you know, I have my rights to do Western stuff, then that means then you're focusing on the animal part. And that's Kanista Adhikari. You know? Like that. We're not talking about pure devotional third-class devotee. Like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see there are those that may be third-class devotees, or like in the beginning of the movement, Prabhupada said, all my devotees are pure devotees. So even though they don't know Shastra much and this and that, but they're so committed that they're pure devotees, even though they may be neophytes. But this, where you identify as a Westerner, then we're talking about, you know, we're not even talking Bhajana Kriya, Vaishnava Association. Faith is a little bit less because we don't actually have faith in the process. It's kind of like we're situating ourselves on a Jnata Sukriti. You know, we're karmis, but, you know, we chant, take some prasad. You know, and so yes, if they do that, great. With time, they will develop that faith. And they will then take up pure devotional service. But you can't equate them as saying. That's wrong. It's cheating. You can't say the two are the same. Is that what I'm saying? Yeah. Yes.
Maharaj, can the statement looking from Vaikuntha be taken as consciousness untouched by gunas but without prema?
Yes.
So we are not talking about geographical position, you know, Vaikuntha.
I mean, Vaikuntha means this. See, the point is we take that Vaikuntha is a place only. But the point is then there's the consciousness of those who are in that place. So the nitya siddhas means their consciousness has not strayed from being directed towards Krishna. So directing it towards Krishna, then they go from that tatastha position, means that liberated position of neutrality, to the positive of prema. Right? And so coming to that position of prema, they're called nitya siddhas. Now if you go from that tatastha position and you glance towards maya, then you go into maya, then you're called nityapada. So why can they use the term nitya? Because the point is this: the soul is eternal, so the material world is a temporary position for it. Therefore, it's that consciousness, material consciousness, started before you were in the material world. Therefore, the term anadi is used. But if we argue over anadi, trying to say that means we've been here eternally, it just means, how can you be here materially? It, every breath of Mahavishnu, you come and go. You know, and then when he breathes out, before Brahma does the creation, all the jivas are all on the platform of Vasudeva Sattva, but not the Krishna conscious Vasudeva Sattva, meaning that they're interested in bhakti, but they're all conscious of the Supreme Lord, conscious of themselves, conscious of the creation, because they're on the platform of Vasudeva. They can see everything. But as soon as Brahma creates it, does everything, then everybody goes, all right, you know, and then goes back to their wherever they were. You know? In other words, they just sit there until it happens. And then they get distracted by their, you know, material sentiments and so on. Then they identify there. So in other words, in that platform of Vasudeva Sattva, they still have the concept that I'm the controller and enjoyer. So the karma sharir is still there. But the stula sharir and Sadhambhamlinga Sharir are not. They're just souls floating around. But they still have that consciousness, the controller, the enjoyer. That's what's been developed when was a platform of Vaikuntha. From that tatastha position in Vaikuntha, one developed I'm the controller and enjoyer. That's what brought you here. If they never developed that and just continue the natural attraction towards Krishna, right? Because the soul's natural position is to be attracted, because the part's always attracted to the whole. Right? You know, kids are always attracted to the parents. You know, it's just the way it works. Does that make sense? So, therefore, if they continue that, then they develop prema, and then they're on that nitya-siddha platform. they don't develop, they don't move that direction, they move the other direction, then they end up here. Then by following that process of seeing everything connected to Krishna, that's how you get back up to that neutral platform, that then from there, that attraction to Krishna is there, and then you can come to the platform of prema. So the result of prema, I mean of sadhana, is you develop attraction to Krishna. Then from cultivating attraction for Krishna in the association with the eternal associates, then you're going to develop prema. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's what you're doing. That's what's going on. So it's, one has to understand the position, but it's the same thing. So all we're doing is applying that here within the context of the Kshatriya. And as a Kshatriya, therefore he sees the environment he's in, the activities he's in, and the results gained from that, all for the satisfaction of the Lord. Therefore, he's acting as a liberated soul would, who is interested in developing prema. Does that make sense? So he's doing the activity that you would do in the spiritual world. Here, in principle. He's working with the material energy, he's working with the material body, but the whole consciousness in doing that is that of the Lord.
So he's in Vaikuntha basically.
So he's actually in Vaikuntha by consciousness. Because material energy is only called material energy because or material world because of our consciousness. If we're on the transcendental platform, it's Krishna's inferior Brahman. Right? Everything's Brahman, this is inferior Brahman. But being bigger than us, we can get attracted by it. Because we're superior Brahman to the material energy as Brahman, but we're infinitesimal while it is one quarter of the cosmic manifestation. Right? So it's way bigger than us, and it's because we're so small we have to take shelter of greater energy. Right? To be connected to Krishna. So then if we take shelter of the internal potency, right, means of devotional service. In that way, then we're connected to Krishna, and then we taste happiness. But if we don't take shelter of the internal potency, we take shelter of the external potency, we're still taking shelter of Krishna, but in incomplete form as Brahman and Paramatma. And so therefore we see things separate from Krishna, that's the incompleteness. Right? Not that Brahman and Paramatma aren't, everything here is based on that. Right? And the external energy is a form of Brahman, it's just inferior. Because it's unconscious. So then, if you're conscious while here in this place, then you're, in effect, in Vaikuntha. By locality, you're in your own place. By the effect, you're in Vaikuntha. So since the effect is that, we call it that. Right? You know, it's just like, let's say if someone comes into a group and by their influence, everybody acts better. It brings out the best in everyone. Right, you know, they'll say, you know, he's godly, or you know, he's come down from heaven, or you know what I'm saying. Or let's say if he comes into the assembly and everybody goes bad and brings out the worst, then they'll say he's the devil. But he's not actually the devil. You know what I'm saying? But it's non-different. So if we're here, we're absorbed in Krishna, therefore performing everything from the platform of pure devotional service. The effect is transcendental, it's spiritualized, it's iron and fire. So we are living in Vaikuntha. But it's not Vaikuntha in that its manifestation is made from the external energy. So it's inferior to the nature of the internal. That will have much superior qualities. You know what I'm saying? You know, it'd be like you get, let's say, first class, new, very large potatoes, right? You just rub them a bit under the water, all the extra skin comes off, they're perfect, no blemishes, they're big, you can cut, do anything you want with them, right? Or the other is that you have potatoes that have been sitting around too long, and, you know, basically after you peel them and cut off the bad parts, you know, you may get half a potato, a third of a potato out of the potato. But it works. You can still make potatoes. Does that make sense? So that's the difference, is that it doesn't have the refinedness and the high qualities of the spiritual world. But the activities are the same. right? In Nanda Baba's house, Mother Yashoda, when she cooks for Krishna, still puts a pot on the fire and puts things in the pot and uses a spoon to stir them around. Right? It's not that that changes. Right? We come here and it's different. You know, over there they just, you know, they just wish it was there and then it manifests on the table. No, that's for the siddhas, and that's for, you know, the material world. And I say, Hermione's husband's mother, that's what she does. Does that make sense? Yeah. If it doesn't make sense, don't worry about it.
So this whole confusion about the fall down, it's about a location, that we focus on location instead of consciousness?
You're trying to fit something eternal into time and space. How well does that work out for the scientists? Nothing. They can understand zero. It's very clear in the Shastra. So it's only by Krishna's mercy you can understand. Right? So that means it's only by consciousness you can understand. If you're trying to use your intelligence and logic to understand, you could go on for billions of lifetimes and you'll still never understand. You could be the smartest person, you'll never understand. Because it's not from here. You didn't fall from here. You can't understand it. And so sense is like this. If saying that statement, you understand and appreciate, you know what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said or what Prabhupada said, like that, because they make these statements. You know, all the acharyas make these points. If you understand that and move on, because the point is it doesn't matter technically how we felt. It just means that we turned our attention from Krishna and thought that activities and results of activities were for our satisfaction instead of situations and activities and results are for Krishna's satisfaction. That's how we got ourselves here. In other words, we're envious of Krishna. He is the Ichha Shakti serving him. We're envious. We want it to serve us. We're not envious that, if you cook something, that it gets cooked. You put it in a pot on the fire, it gets cooked. We're not envious of that. We're envious of that, why after cooking it, it goes to Krishna, not to me. So that's why then the form of the material world is like a reflection. It has the same activity, same form, same values. Right? How can we understand Krishna book? There's families, there's mothers, fathers, there's children, they have wealth, they have homes, they have clothes, they have ornaments. That wasn't our problem. We liked all that. We just wanted it for us to learn Krishna. So therefore we come here and then we get to do all that here. Now when we learn that you're not supposed to do that for ourselves but for Krishna, then that's what the example is here. Now one can say, yeah, but you know, I have more stuff than others, how do I engage it? Anyone's got more stuff than Prithu Maharaj? You know, the last verse that made the point. Whatever he did as emperor of the whole world, not emperor of France, and that means, you know, emperor of, you know, Rome, or emperor of Macedonia, or, you know, emperor of the Middle Kingdom, you know. You ever been to Xi'an? Right? It's out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, literally nowhere. In fact, you haven't even heard of it. But the emperor, you know, the first emperor, that's where he was, of China. We don't even know the place. You've probably heard of the terracotta soldiers. That's in Xi'an. It's out in the middle of nowhere. You know, it's like saying, you know, the first emperor of America was from St. Louis. It's like, where's that? You know, it's like, I've heard of it, but, you know, you say New York, Los Angeles, okay, you know, D.C., I understand that. You know, someone's from Uxbridge, you know, it's like, where's that? Yeah. So, therefore, if someone now wants to get into detail, how can you fog it? Then you're totally unqualified for the discussion. You understand? Because then they're trying to identify according to time and space and their own mundane logic, their own intelligence, meager intelligence. Then how to do it? Because we have to remember it. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then the rule is, don't discuss this.
It's not a topic of discussion. It may come up in a discussion of something else as an example. But it itself as a topic of discussion, all the Vaishnava Acharyas, the other Sampradayas, when the question came up to write papers on this, then the other Sampradayas were approached, you know, they're scholars. And they said our Acharya said not to discuss about this. So they don't. So the Madhvashis, they wouldn't discuss it. They said, but you know, if you want to, you know, talk about what your idea is, we'll listen. But they weren't going to bring anything up. So therefore our Acharya says that it's not for discussion. The point is understand the Krishna conscious aspect of it, that you can do. But if you want to try to nail down the time and space and, you know, Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock, you know, between crumpet 2 and crumpet 3, then you looked across and sitting on the other side of the table was Maya, and she, you know, smiled, and that was it. You know, you dropped your crumpet, and the rest is history. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, no, it's not, it doesn't work. So that's why it's not a point of discussion. Being brought up in relation to the philosophy, it makes sense, great. And if it's not a point to discuss because he can't. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's like 8-year-olds talking about sex. They can't understand. So there's no meaning. Okay. The term Karma Yoga is often used in Bhagavad Gita, and here in Maharaj Prithu is giving a practical example of what Karma Yoga actually is. The first requirement for the proper execution of Karma Yoga is given herein. Phalam Brahmani Sannyasya, or Vinya Vinyasya. One must give the fruits of his activities to the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahman, Krishna. By doing so, one actually situates himself in the renounced order of life, sannyas. Right? So here, the Supreme Brahman, Parabrahman, and Krishna. So he gets all Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan all together. But they're all, see, Supreme Brahman means Krishna. But that aspect of Brahman, how he pervades everything. Parabrahman, then how, as person, he's expanded and pervades everything is Paramatma. And then Krishna is Bhagavan. So always, this is how we apply. By doing so, one actually situates himself in the renounced order of life, sannyas. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18.2, giving up the fruits of one's activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is called sannyas. Kamyanam karmanam nyasam sannyasam kavayogi sarva karma phalam tyagam prahus tyagam vichakshanam. To give up the results of all activities is called renunciation, tyag, by the wise. And the state is called the renounced order of life, sannyas, by great learned men. Although he was living as a householder, Prithu Maharaj was actually in the renounced order of life, sannyas. This will be clear in the following verses. Right? So here is that when you give up, and here it says all activities, then that's called renunciation, right? That you're giving it up, that's renouncing it. The state of, you know, in which one is doing that, that's sannyas. Does that make sense? So someone on the platform of sannyas means in their consciousness everything's for Krishna. Then that means the results of all activities are given up for Krishna. Right? That's sannyas. So by performing that activity of renunciation, then they're always doing that. Right? So that makes sense. You also have the aspect that you'll see that in the purports to that verse, and Prabhupada will bring up the point is that if you're not giving up the results of all activities, you think that they're yours. And then once getting them, then you give them to Krishna. Then that's called being situated in renunciation. But when you give up all activities for Krishna, to renounce all of them, that situation is called sannyas. You understand the difference? All, it'll be given to Krishna, but it's a matter of the consciousness. Is, are you working for Krishna already? That's Nishkam Karma Yoga. Right? It means I have no attachment to the results, I'm working for Krishna. Sakam Karma Yoga means I'm working for myself and I give the results to Krishna. Right? So in other words, it's not the renunciation, it's the situation in that renunciation that makes it sannyas. That you give it to Krishna, that's renunciation, you see it in both. But being situated in sannyas means that the consciousness is always in that state. So, as pointed out here, as a householder, he can be situated like that and always absorbed in doing everything for Krishna. So he's technically sannyas. So actually the purpose of the Vedic culture is to be whatever varna ashram you're in, according to the situation that's favorable for, you know, what you have, then you're absorbed in the aspect of sannyas, you know, in pure devotion. Because you can't be on that platform unless you're absorbed in pure devotion. So only pure devotees can be situated on that sannyas platform. Right? So it's not even the renounced order itself is technically sannyas. It's the order in which it makes it the easiest to do that. Right? It's like obligatory that you're going to be endeavoring for that. In other words, the sannyas is trying to be renounced and connect everything to Krishna. Now whether he's situated, that state of sannyas, that then will come to practice. Right? So in the Vedic situation, everybody and every born in ashram could be situated in the state of sannyas, because they're all pure devotees. That's what Varnashram, that's what the Vedic system is for. So then to say that, well, we don't need this Vedic system, it's archaic and all that, means we lack the proper understanding of what actually is being given. Right? So we see we're on fourth canto, but it's still pointing these things out. Right? So from the first verse, it's pointing it out. Bhagavad Gita is pointing this out. So the Vedic literatures, this is what they point out. Since the Bhagavatam is the essence, it's all about seeing Krishna in everything. Right? Vedanta Sutra, here it does through nice examples and the stories, see the great personalities, the lives of the great Vaishnavas. Vedanta Sutra does the same thing, but it does it by taking every word that people value and therefore see things either connected to Krishna or not by these words and shows how they are connected to Krishna. Does that make sense? That's all it's doing. Anything that, any word in the Shastra that by using it, then you can take you away from Krishna and say it's Brahman or Paramatma, it's not Bhagavan. Or there is no, it's all about karma, you don't have to worry about the Supreme. Any of those words, that's what Vedanta Sutra defines in relationship to the Supreme. In relationship to Krishna. Right? So then Bhagavatam just shows an example of how people who think like that, who have the proper Vedantic view, how they act. That's the Bhakti. The activities that they follow, that you'll see in all the other literatures. Devotional service will be mentioned, but in Bhagavatam, the two go together. It's not going to mention something unless it's connected with devotional service. That makes sense?
Did I understand it correctly? Does it mean that Sakama Karma Yoga is a stage of Tyaga and Nishkama Karma Yoga is a stage of sannyas?
Yes. But it's not dependent upon what varna or ashram you're in. That's the difficulty with the Vedic system, is you have all these things that typically can go along together, but they don't have to. Does that make sense? So typically you would have someone who's married, they would have so many material desires, so they would be on Sakam as a neophyte devotee. Right? Does that make sense? In mixed devotional service. But it doesn't have to. It's seen here by Preetam Maharaj, he's doing all these things. So he is situated in pure devotional service. He's situated on that platform of sannyas. But he's a grihastha. So that's the whole thing, is that there is the typical, that's the beauty of the Vedic system, is that all these aspects are different views of Krishna consciousness. And they may have their natural patterns within if the consciousness is polluted. But at the same time, as they also have they can be independent of that, because bhakti is independent. So when they touch bhakti, they become independent of these. So saying that, okay, the grihastha can only do this and the sannyasa can only do that, that aspect of the rules, then that's the thing. But you have to be situated on that. You can't be a neophyte grihastha in mixed devotional service and claim that you can do the activities of someone on a higher level because you're chanting Hare Krishna. Is that like that? You can't do that. If your consciousness is on that level, yes. But then you won't say it like that. You'll just be doing it and people won't even notice. But if they do notice, then you'll explain the devotional part of it. Because if one says, oh, I chant, I don't have to follow the rules, then that means that by following the rules, that's lower, and not following the rules is higher. Therefore, if I don't follow the rules, I'll be more advanced. Therefore, why should I follow the rules? So by using that as a philosophy, you break down the system of authority and the system of discipline and the structure, culture, economics, community, family, everything. And then at the same time, then the same individuals will be in anxiety, oh, why don't we have community, why don't we have families, we have to work on all these relationships, you know, relationships are so important. They're not discussing it from the Vedic point of sambandha abhideya prayojana, where sambandha means relationship. They're getting it off the internet. You know, Dr. Phil or something.
What does that mean, that bhakti is independent?
It doesn't require any facility from the material world to function. It doesn't require any situation, any activity, any result to function. You can be Krishna conscious despite the material situation. You know, example being Prahladaraj. You would have to say that he's not in a great situation. Right? Born in a demon family. And of demon families, he is born in the demon family. Right? You know, it's just like you have, you know, the wife of the president's the first lady, you know, or you know, or he's the, you know, the what do you call it? There's a term for it. The first citizen or something. It's like it means that he's a citizen of the state, but he's the number one. There's a term for it.
Photos is president of the United States and then first lady.
Flotus.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But the point is, they're still citizens, but they're the first citizens. You know, that was started by Louis the 14th. You know, he was didn't get his head cut off. Why quote the 16th, right? He didn't do so well. So he started this where the king is actually the first citizen. Because by doing that, he'd invest everybody else more into work in the mechanics of the state. You could expand the state and make a more powerful state. That's how he took over Europe. Otherwise, he's just another little king like every other little king, you know, fighting over, you know, this pumpkin patch or that pumpkin patch. You know? So he just figured he'd take all the pumpkin patches. Right? So then he worked out this concept of state. So he's a very good statesman. The only problem is that not being Krishna conscious, you won't put the proper balance and all that, and then you have that kind of power, and then, you know, the 15th loses that, 16th is just existing there until it gets taken away. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then the point is that being, how do you say, how do you get into that? Being the first citizen. That's what we're trying to establish. Yes, Prahladmar. So he's not born in a demon family. He's born in the demon family. You know, that's what we're trying to establish. There's not more of a demon family. There's not a more prestigious, more demoniac, you know, more demonly influential family than his family. You know, if you can say, oh yeah, but my family is demons like that. Not like Prahladmar's family. Now, that's demons. Right? You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? Yeah. So therefore, in that. Then he goes to school. His teachers, they're demons. They're just trying to teach him materialism. Right? Does that make sense? And then